All right. Good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 18, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, an absolute packed agenda today, but packed in a different way than we had it packed last week. Some of you were here with us last week, and let's start, as we always start, public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything they want. So I've got a couple requests, but they involve a specific item on our agenda. I'll ask everybody, if you want to speak at the time we get to the specific item, that's great. If you have anything else you want to talk about, anything else you want to bring up, now's a great time. Come right up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to two very nice things, but things that I don't particularly like doing because it means that we're losing staff members who have been with us. So let's start with Paula Haberman. Paula is in our IT department. Paula actually kind of started our IT department. She's been there 20 years. I don't know what the knowledge that she has on day-to-day issues that we have going on in IT, I don't know how we're going to replace that. Fortunately, we've got a great IT staff, many of them sitting in the back of the room. You guys have got your hands full. I see four of you back there. It's going to take at least four of you to try to replace what Paula's done for us the last 20 years. Paula, we so appreciate your service to the people of Story County. We have a little plaque, a little token for you. And I tell you what, we're going to hold before we take the picture so that Supervisor Olson, here she is, just walk right in front for us. We're going to take a picture right now. Paula, come up here and take a picture.
So the plaque says, in appreciation of 20 years of leadership, dedication, and service to the citizens of Story County. Everybody get their pictures? Oh, they're all through their fast. Oh, they need to give us the high sign when they're done.
So I make no secret that I think our conservation department and conservation board is the absolute best in the state. Our director and all our board members work so hard to make sure that we position Story County in the absolute best position possible for our citizens and for the environment and for all the amenities we offer. Anybody who pays attention knows that in order to be able to do the things that we've done in conservation over the last few years, you've got to have somebody who makes sure the trains run on time. And we have absolutely had that in Jolene Van Wass. She's been with Story County for 32 years and has been instrumental in making sure that all the details that are so necessary for us to be able to fund and administer the programs that we have in conservation have gotten done and gotten done better than anywhere else. Jolene, we are really, really going to miss you and so appreciate the service you've put in. I would ask Mike Cox, would you like to say anything at this point? And, Barb, I should have given you the same opportunity. I'm sorry I didn't. You can avail yourself of that for Paula if you'd like to.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Ricky summed it up really well. Well, I'll just add, I haven't been here all that long. I came in 2011 and was wet behind the ears with Story County. And who better to help kind of shepherd me through the processes and keep us in track and keep me in track as we went. So, Jolene, I tell you what, you will be missed. It has been an extreme pleasure, And I'll echo every word that Rick said about enabling the county and the department to really excel. So thank you very much.
So another plaque, and coincidentally it says, in appreciation of 32 years of leadership, dedication, and service to the citizens of Story County. Jolene, thank you so much. Let's take a picture.
I just want to say, I've worked with her 32 years from the time I went to insurance to the county and as a board member. And yes, she is a jewel. And we are going to miss her.
We're going to miss her. You're
welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, come on.
Not yet.
I'm going to be for a while.
Okay. Eric, go get after you. Thanks, All right, next item is discussion and consideration of draft Story County Community Infrastructure Grant Program. Leanne, I know, is Dustin as well. Yeah, so Leanne and Dustin. All right, so let's see. I'll try to give a little background on this if I can. So Story County has typically, for the last 6 or 7 years, Story County has been really interested in taking a leadership role in economic development opportunities in our smaller town. That read is less than 2,000 people. So not Huxley, Nevada, Story City, or Ames. We fully recognize that our role with Ames is almost non-existent, really, really limited. Ames needs to take care of Ames. Where we've had a hole traditionally, and we noticed that this year with the Burke marketing and the EB opportunities, we've had a hole in what the county's role, if anything, is with our mid-sized towns, Huxley, Story City, and Nevada. And so what I understand, and Leanne, you can help me with this is a joint effort between you and our contract holders with the AEDC to put together the draft of something we might consider in the future for the way a program might work. And let me start with this. So I appreciate you guys bringing this. I'm going to be really reticent of this board taking any kind of action. We need, if this is a concept that possibly we could look at as we start budget talks and look into the future, I'll be fine with that. If you're asking us to make some kind of decision today, I'm going to really struggle with that. I don't know how the rest of the board
I would ask that this be moved to the new board in 2019. So love to hear about what you guys present, but other than that, I think Rick gets it right and I agree with Lawrence.
Yeah, so conceptually, take us through how we got here, and if I missed something on what initiated you guys working on something like this, help me with that as well.
And you're right. We're here for discussion purposes only. Really set the stage so that this does not fall through cracks when we start budget discussions.
Okay. And I would just like to point out that Supervisor-elect Merkin is not here today, just so that she, part of this discussion may have to be repeated after the procedure.
Yeah, this is simply intended, I think, to be an introduction to, so think in broad terms, what, if anything, is Story County's responsibility to help our mid-sized town hopefully leverage outside dollars, outside resources that could be coming in? What is our role? Do we have a role? And let's start with the concept of this, but I think that's the overarching theme that we're going to be talking about into the new year.
Right, and this is one of the, this is one option that the board might consider. There are several that I considered. And it's to get the discussion started today and get some direction from the board that this is worth spending staff time to do, to flush out and working with AEDC in greater detail.
And you just said you looked at several?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to get that.
Okay, sorry. Okay, I will zip through.
Yeah, thank you. I can't read well then.
Okay.
And as Rick said, this is really kind of following up on different discussions at different levels of how we address mid-sized communities. What's before you today isn't just focused for mid-sized communities. I'll tell you how I kind of got to that and where this came from, because I did not create this. This came from someone else. But Laura, to get to your question, and as I stated, I looked at possibly bringing forth amendments to our economic development policies and procedures, adding like a fifth category to that. You know, there's 1 through 4. That was the initial direction in which I was headed, and I had it drafted. Then I started thinking about it. That really is not necessarily the best approach, because that then gets implemented and funded through our urban renewal area plan. So if we had a program that's open-ended, whatever it looks like, that communities could apply for financial assistance, we would have to go through the process to amend that plan each and every time, or at least once a year, preferably every time, so that's up and going to the most recent it should be. That's still an option. I would actually like to remove that off the table as an option, though, because I think that is really problematic. And that is saying then that we're using the TIF funding for this.
Right.
And that's what you'll see. There's not an indication of what the funding mechanism is for this at this time. I mean, it's conceptual, just don't even have a draft amount in there either. You have a question, Laura?
Well, I'm really surprised. I would like to know how we got on this rift. I think it's insane looking at what we're doing for other communities, but that's where I'm still confused. When you said, well, you looked at an option, but you rejected it. Okay, so, but normally options come to the board in some presentation all at one time. That's where I'm confused. Okay, so keep going.
Well, it's part of the staff dialogue I have with the staff.
Yeah, so I don't want to be offended if one or more supervisors ask for other options to be presented.
Nope, that's fine.
Okay.
The other option I looked at that's for open for consideration is increasing funding to the Story County Economic Development Group and having whatever mechanism is in place through that entity. If a community needs matching grant funds for something, or they have an expansion of an industrial park, maybe Roland wants to put something in that they could go to the Economic Development Group, pardon me, for that. And that would obviously all these have financial implications, and that's what I'm bringing up now, so that as we begin to look at the budget, we can start thinking about these. Then just some, you know, just taking the facade grant program and kind of rewriting that to meet the intention of this. Really what it came down is I have a family member that works for in the Mesabi Range, Iron Range, northern Minnesota, that she actually does a very similar grant program. And we were talking about daycare programs, in fact, and we were just battling just ideas back and forth, and she sent me something very similar to this. Their communities are 150 and under rather than 2,000 and under, and so I kept that 2,000 number. And so I wanted to get this before the board for some discussion. Again, if it's something that you want staff to spend time doing, and then it does right now say it's open to all communities. Today's not, I'm not here to have you wordsmith everything. I mean, it's just conceptually, is this the type of program you want, or is it a different approach that you want staff to take? The overall goal is to help to assist with job creation, and with that, I'll answer any questions.
Yeah, so any questions for Leanne before I'd ask Dustin to kind of address this from your perspective. And so with your questions, so the way I see this happen, so we got to go back to both Burke and Eby. We've got Mark Jackson here, and Mark, I'd ask if you've got anything to add to this conversation, you help us with it. But when we had that conversation about resolutions of support, we were really clear that we were supporting the concept of these things going in because we didn't have any mechanism to tie any tangible support to it over and above the Board of Supervisors saying, yes, this sounds like a great thing. Yes, we want to be supportive. And so coming out of that meeting with those resolutions, we said, boy, if we're going to support something like this, we better start looking at what kind of mechanism the board might want to use in the future to be able to support something like this. And that's my understanding of kind of where the conversations, and as I understand it, Dustin, you helped me, but this conversation went all around the circuit with AEDC staff, visiting with Leanne. Leanne, this primarily came from you after all those conversations. Am I seeing that right of how we got to what's in front of us today?
Right, and I would share your recollection that this was about mid-sized communities at first and the idea that Ames is self-sufficient, and yet we provide robust community support and economic development support for our rural communities. Do you have a question?
So I'll let you finish.
Okay.
Take a breath, and
sure.
Then I have a statement.
Sure.
Or a comment.
Okay, and so one component of this was that we wanted to formalize the process of requests for county support. And the reason we formalize that is just so that we're intentional and thoughtful, both from the community perspective as well as the perspective of the reviewers, about the projects that we want to see come to Story County.
My concern right now, and thank you both for saying we're not going to do anything today, okay? My concern is creating expectations in advance. I know that this was vetted. There was talk of this clear back in September, okay? And so my concerns are that economic staff was out there and may have been actually portraying in advance that there was going to be some kind of commitment coming. So thank you for clarifying that today.
Yeah,
of this has been so preliminary and kind of like just little discussions rather than anything that has been a truly organized effort, correct?
Right. So none of the planning, at least from our perspective, none of the planning from my perspective has gone, or our organization's perspective, has gone to any of the companies that we've talked to or anything like that. But the idea is that we are formalizing that process. I'll add to Rick and to all of you that a lot of these projects are going to be eligible for that kind of application anyway, going to the county. And again, this is about being intentional and thoughtful. So if we're looking at urban renewal applications, for instance, a lot of different projects could come to the county if you look at the plan that I have in front of me here, at least. And so this is just making sure that we're vetting those applications even more so than we were before.
I don't think we're ill-served to have the discussion again as you onboard a new person whose opinions you're going to find out. In ways known and unknown, I expect that's all we're doing today. And I would like to think that the success that this board, previous boards, has had would be acknowledged and built upon. But in the coming days and months, I think we will see, in fact, where we would like to go. I think you have gone out in the communities very well, and you know what you see and what you hear. And I'd like to think that you would take them into account as far as their expectations as we push AEDC into a role, into their meetings and into contacts as they bring people and ideas to the table. And Leanne has just done that. I can see where she's just on a clearinghouse basis. And the fact is, she's a city planner. She would probably have a multiple of choices to pick up off the desk and give us.
Right. And that's why I indicated one thing as we pick this up is that I think that other plans should be looked at. But that we can do going forward. So, all right. So I appreciate the clarity and the clarifications here about really what's happening today, because when all you have is something on an agenda with no explanation, with an urge memo or something like that. Okay.
I would hope that as we move into 2019, so anytime a proposal comes forward to the board, it's still the board's responsibility to deal with that proposal and options.
Right.
And so please, 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 Loris, don't get caught up in that this is all you saw, so somehow there was something nefarious happening.
Not yet nefarious. I just heard conversations. So I'm glad. I'm glad it's all out there and stuff. So are we looking for a motion to move forward, to move it to the...
So I'm taking this more as direction. Dustin, go ahead. If you had something to...
I'll just add some feedback to this plan or this preliminary information here from our organization. And this actually came, I think, from Mark, your idea about the review process for applications coming to Story City. Actually, you mentioned that sometimes that you look at other applications through the state, the DOT applications, or Iowa Economic Development Authority applications, and those are actually pretty thorough, and the staff members actually go through a meticulous process for review. So sometimes it helps to maybe consider their applications as well if we could present those to you.
Yeah, well, and so in my mind, when all this happened back in September, and Mark, I vividly remember you sitting in that chair and us having this conversation. At that point, I was thinking of how is it possible for the county to assist the city in leveraging state or federal funding, right? So many of our economic development opportunities, if it's the right project, there is state and federal dollars that are following to the tune of 80% or 50%, depending on the kind of project. And how would the county participate, possibly participate, at some level to help leverage those funds coming in? And what it turned into, as so often those kind of initial, you know, thumbnail ideas do, it turned into a more broad-based, elaborate kind of thing. And what I was looking for, and what I'm hoping ultimately we're going to get to, is something that pretty simply says to our professional staffs in particularly mid-sized communities, hey, if a project, a BERC or an EB, comes along that we can bring in state funding, here's the portion, if any, that the county can help to leverage those funds. What would that look like? And go through that all the way to figure out where the county is.
Right, okay. So that was actually, it was in just one of the two propositions. The burden was assessed. Okay, so that sounds like we're on the same length, and that somehow, as we've jumped forward with this one, that probably the new board after the first of the year is going to want to go back and have the staff take a look at, like Leanne said, how much more time for those other options need to be developed, okay, and then moving forward to there. Yeah, how can we, if we want to, is the money there? I mean, you know, is the money there?
So. I would just encourage you as you step into the new year that the metric you use, that you improve what you have, don't start it.
Right.
We have success here. It's on the wall behind me. And we have things in motion right now.
So I'm just looking for consensus here from the board. What I'm hearing is direction to bring the concept, and this can be the placeholder, the concept, but I would add to it, kind of start from those resolutions that we passed. Come and talk to the new board about, here's what happened in 2018. Here's the tool in the toolbox that we'd like to have. We don't know exactly what it looks like, but here's the tool we'd like to have, and let's have this conversation in January of 2019.
That's
is that enough direction?
That is enough.
Okay, that works. Yeah.
Consensus on the direction. Leanne, anything to add?
No, that's perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Minutes from December 11th.
Who has presented?
And I'll second that.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed.
Move as presented.
Second.
That's Olson.
Second.
No, you seconded. You actually moved.
Oh,
so now
okay.
You're saying aye.
Time, aye. Okay.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. Board, let's pull all the appointments and move, or reappointments,
okay,
or appointments, and move through them one at a time. So consent agenda without the board appointments.
I would move our consent agenda as listed today, less the appointments, and there you go.
Second.
Motion in the second. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. All right, appointments. Deb Shildroth and I, in our current process for doing board appointments, we work through and make a recommendation to the board. It is only a recommendation, but that's what we have before us today. So let's start with Asset. Deb, you and I are recommending Nora Ryan to fill a 3-year term on Asset. Would you add anything to that?
No, I've met with Nora on a couple of occasions. She came to one, if not two, Asset meetings just to kind of do a trial run to see if it was something that she truly was interested in. And, she continued to have that interest. And so I felt out of the two applicants that she was probably the best match at this point in time.
Questions on Nora or a motion to approve? Appoint.
I'll move that we appoint Nora Ryan to a 3-year term as a Story County representative on the Asset Board.
I would second that.
Motion in the second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Next is Lynn Scarlin, a reappointment to the Board of Adjustment. Deb, you want to add anything on that one?
No, other than, Lynn has served one term. She was interested in continuing after we didn't have any applicants for that particular vacancy, so we're pleased.
And Lynn's done a nice job on the board.
Absolutely, because,
and we're
yes.
fortunate to keep her in. She does a good job here in the Manhattan and Beta at the Ames Center. Is that a motion? And that is a motion to nominate Lynn Scarlett to a reappointment to our Board of Adjustment.
Second.
Motion and second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Lynn's reappointed. Mark Speck to the Board of Health. We actually have two openings on the Board of Health. One of them is currently filled by Mark Speck. He would like to continue in that position. We had a chance to visit with Mark about it. We visited with a couple members of the board about Mark continuing. He shows up at every meeting. He does a really good job. He, as a professional plumber, he offers an area of expertise we don't otherwise have on the board. For those reasons, I suggest we reappoint him. You got any thoughts that you want to?
I agree with what you said.
Everything Mark or Rick said is true. I sat with Mark in the last 2.5 years, and he is worthy of returning. I would nominate Mark Specht to a reappointment to the Board of Health.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
I'd like just to point out that while this would seem at this particular point to look like we've not achieved gender balance, there will be an appointment of a supervisor on January 2nd to the Board of Health. And so I am grateful about the gender balance probably being able to go forward on that board by the time it convenes for its next meeting.
Yeah, huge fan of gender balance. I hope we never lose sight of having the best people possible appointed to our boards and commissions. Next appointment is also for the Board of Health. This lady has so impressed me in so many ways. She came to us, was it a year ago or 2 years ago, and we really didn't have a spot on a board or commission that met regularly. We appointed her to the Civil Service Commission, which I don't think has met in the last year, or maybe has met once in the last year. And so when the opportunity came to appoint her to the Board of Health, great experience and diverse experience from the rest of our Board of Health members, more of a biological kind of perspective, but with great medical and veterinary experience as well. You want to talk about Louisa?
She's very interested. In fact, when she turned in her application a year ago, Board of Health was the first board or commission that was on her application. That was her strong area of interest. She's attended some of the Board of Health meetings. She's attended board supervisors meetings. And she kept on top of the progress made with Crestview throughout the year this past year. So I really think she's expressed interest in commitment to wanting to serve in that capacity.
Questions?
None. John Passion, at our last Board of Health meeting, had an impromptu opportunity to every candidate that was in the room, and Horace was there too, and I think she knocked it out of the park, and she is going to will serve Story County very well on a going forward basis, so I would nominate Louisa. Somebody help me with the last name. Pronunciation?
Tabatai? Is that how it's said?
Yes.
Okay. For a 3-year term on the Board of Health.
Yes. I would second that.
Motion second. Before we vote, I want to say we had two other applicants for the Board of Health, one of whom has now withdrawn their application, but we have, both of them were outstanding applicants. We have one standing application, and I would just encourage the new board as we go forward in 2019 and Supervisor Chitty rolls off the Board of Health that we fully consider the potential talent that we've left sitting there. This was not an easy decision. It sure was not a slam dunk decision to get to this. We're blessed with a wealth of riches in this, but two phenomenal candidates that we're not appointing here. So with that, Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Louisa, excited to see what you're going to do. Thank you for being here. Okay, next is Conservation Board reappointment of Ted Tedesco. I would say that he was our only application to fill the Conservation Board, but for me it really wouldn't have mattered what other applications we got. Ted does a phenomenal job on our Conservation Board, and we are really, really lucky to have him. Deb, you want to add anything to that?
You said it all.
Good.
I would move that we reappoint Ted Tedesco for a 5-year term to the Conservation Board.
And I would gladly second that.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Planning and Zoning Commission, where we're going to actually have another hole to fill as well, but we'll deal with that one in 2019. This is a hole for our departing chair. We had one application, and it's actually a really, really good one. His name is Doug Moore. more, really active in the community, active in a lot of rural issues that we have going on. And so that's who Deb and I are bringing forward for planning and zoning.
Yes, I recommend Doug Moore. And I do this is on the side. There is a reappointment to the Planning and Zoning Commission that did not get on the agenda. And that's Marvin Smith.
Okay.
Next one.
Yes, sir. Okay. We'll take care of that. Great.
Do I have a motion?
Yes. I move that we appoint Doug Moore to a 5-year term on the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Second. Motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All right. VA Commission. This one's a little different because we're actually appointing early or proposing that we appoint early. These terms do not start until July 1st. Now, we've got kind of an interesting dynamic going in that one of our commission members has been notified that he's going to active duty. And so do we know when in the spring this commission member is going active duty? Feels like last I heard it was sometime March or April that he's going active duty. And so there's potential to have the appointment go ahead and serve. Deb, do you want to talk about all this as we go through?
Sure. So we have the two upcoming vacancies as of June 30th, and Terry Greenfield is a current commission member who is interested in being reappointed, so that's why his appointment's on there. And then we had two additional applicants for the vacancy that Russell Bauer will be stepping away from, and so we interviewed both of those applicants. And recommending Kate Gregory to fill that vacancy. We did look into some information in the Iowa Code with regards to the when these appointments are to be made by the Board of Supervisors, and this is the only commission where the code has a very specific time when the appointment should take place, and that is stated in June for the appointment to take effect July 1st. And so that's a discussion item for the board this morning as to wanting to make those appointments now and then again in June, or how you want to handle that. And
yeah, we have our county attorney here as well. So my feeling on all of this has been we're trying to streamline our process as much as possible to do all of our applications and appointments in a timely fashion. Now, recognizing that the appointment cannot occur until July 1st, I still think it's appropriate for the board to run its process as it sees fit. The other part about this one is we don't know exactly when the opening for Russell Bauer is going to occur. It's going to occur no later than July 1st, but it could occur, and in fact probably will occur, much earlier than that. I think there's real value in going ahead and notifying commission members as far ahead as possible that they're going to be part of this thing. Kate Gregory, for anybody who doesn't know Kate Gregory's background, it is a phenomenal, high-achieving background, and she absolutely will bring a little different voice to the board, to the commission. And it'll be really interesting to see how all of that's integrated. We just need to talk through the process to get us to those points. I stand here today, or sit here today, saying board should be able to act when the board wants to act. It's just not effective until said effective date.
I agree. I also think from a practical standpoint, our Director of External Operations wanted it to kind of lead this change so everybody was being kind of looked at and vetted at the same time, is that when applicants apply, they're asked for second or third choices also. And if you go back and take a look at some of the applicants over the last 2 years, we had other female veterans just for this one that they were appointed somewhere else because there was also a match there. But selecting the applicants and the nominations all at the same time allows some ability to match people to where they can best be of benefit and still
fill their desire to serve. So I'm fine, and I think it's a positive way to go, is if we name her now, subject to moving forward with it and the county attorney. I see. Do you agree that we can go ahead and name someone now?
Yeah, the appointment would just be effective on that July 1st date.
Okay. And then if our current member is deployed earlier, do we move up her effectiveness? Do we just do that on a consent agenda in the future?
For effective date, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would do two motions. I would do one motion to have her be substitute up to July 1st, and then I'd have one appointing her on July 1st. And that way it's...
Absolutely, but we don't know exactly when that substitute date is going to be. So I would suggest that the board comes back when we know when that date is.
But
so
you know it's before July 1st?
We believe he's going to be deployed before July 1st, but this is
prior
to the military.
You're not going to tell you.
Exactly. When it's going to happen when it happens.
How dare they? Okay.
I would take that as expert testimony, so I would have to say... I like the process. I mean, we've all seen the difficulty we have in retaining talent and then attracting talent. And if we can bring something before us, and if it pleases the board, I would move both nominations at the same time.
For effective July 1.
Yes.
Right.
And then we would have to come back and deal with it.
We're going to revisit in a time you may or may not. So I'm not going to get caught up in the fact that you can do something today that you may never have to use. But if you do, you have the latitude and the time to do it.
Okay, I heard two separate motions. How about if I second that one?
Which one?
The one you just made for two of them at the same time, because they would be on July 1.
Right. Yep, this is for July 1, both of those.
Okay, I'll second those.
All right, further discussion?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. That takes care of the July 1. Now there's a conversation of, do we do something now for this opening that we think is coming but may or may not come? My suggestion is that we just hold off, and when we find out what the date is, then it becomes something that the board deals with in 2019. Kate Gregory is well aware that her term is going to begin at some point, assuming she's going to be appointed today, at some point leading up to July 1st.
Okay. And so, but the county attorney, if I heard you right, okay.
That's fine.
Is that good? Okay. All right. Super. In that case, I'm good.
So that requires no further
action. I look at my counsel to tell me what's
anything else on appointments? Deb, you did a great job, as always, getting us through this whole process.
Thank you.
All right. Public hearing items. This is second consideration of Ordinance 280, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, and Resolution 1947, future C2C future land use map amendment. So we spent 2 hours on this last week. Let's not spend 2 hours on it this week.
Yeah, we have a brief presentation this morning. As Rick mentioned, we had a pretty thorough presentation, had a lot of good input from the general public and discussion from the board. We did receive some comments, one from a property owner outside of the quarter mile, which Emily will talk about, and then we also received some information from the fire chief with Gilbert. We also want to use this opportunity to talk about the new condition and the revised condition. And then the applicant, Mr. Friedrich, is here, too, if you have questions for him.
Yeah, we'll have at least two speak. We'll have Ms. Friedrich speak and then Mr. Johnson speak as well.
Okay, so as Jerry said, we did receive a couple additional public comments following last week's meeting. On December 12th, the Board of Supervisors Chair received an email from an individual that lives approximately half a mile north of the subject property, and this individual expressed concerns about whether or not the existing infrastructure was capable of handling the additional traffic, mixing the residential traffic with farm traffic, the safety of bikers along the roads, the potential impact on water quality, and also on the rural lifestyle of the area. Yesterday, we received an email from the Gilbert Franklin Fire Chief with the following questions. Will there be fire hydrants in this development? Staff responded that no, there will not be fire hydrants in this development. He asked what the diameter of the cul-de-sacs would be. I responded with our requirements for cul-de-sacs, although I did indicate that information won't be solid until the plat is submitted. And then he asked if there are any actions that he needed to take, and the response was that the applicant will ask for a response in writing at the time the subdivision plat is applied for. Last week at the public hearing, after public comment and discussion, the Board of Supervisors approved the first consideration of the proposed rezoning, which is Ordinance Number 280, and the C2C Future Land Use Map Amendment, which is Resolution 1947, with the following conditions. And staff worked to draft these, so we want to run them by you now. So the first condition was modified to read, the total number of development lots shall not exceed the total number of developable acres up to a maximum of 70 developable acres, and this is not to exceed 70 single-family dwellings. The second condition was that the applicant shall work with Story County Environmental Health and Story County Planning and Development to identify areas on the subject property where it is possible to group septic system discharge for the purpose of limiting disruption to prairie remnants and other environmentally sensitive areas. We worked with both conservation and environmental health staff to word that. So, would you like me to read through the remainder of the conditions?
They're the same as they were, of course, last week. I don't need them.
No, we were very thorough. It was a long meeting and we covered it.
Okay. Anything else that you guys want to present before we hear from the public?
I don't think so.
Okay. Questions before we hear from the public board? Okay. So I would ask applicant Kirk Friedrich to come up and address the board. So my first question, Kurt, would be, did that feel like, in textual form, what we talked about last week in terms of the conditions? And I'm not asking you whether you love them or not. I'm just asking if that's what you felt like you walked away from here last week understanding.
Hi, Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Real Estate, 106th Street. Yes, is the answer. Obviously, with any project, there's compromise, and I'm sure we can reach this going forward. I wanted to just follow up on Emily's comments there regarding Gilbert Fire. So we actually are planning on having hydrants in the development. And I had talked with one of the board members of Gilbert Fire, and typically the placement of these hydrants would be 400 to 500 feet apart. That is what we had done at Cameron Estates, and that's what we're planning to do here in the Dotson development. And the width of the diameter of our cul-de-sacs is also 90 feet wide minimum, which is what is proposed on our conceptual development plan, which is ample for the turnaround of emergency service vehicles. So we've accommodated for those. I guess my last request would be, in view of trying to move forward with closing here before year end, I would ask that the supervisors waive the final readings here for us on the approval of what's been proposed and approved last week.
Super. Thanks, Kurt.
Questions
for Kurt? Nothing. Thank you very much. Next is John Johnson, who spoke to us last week as well. John, welcome back. Yes, sir.
My name is John Johnson, and I'm here to represent members of the three drainage districts of this particular property, that terminate on this property, I should say. We've heard, as was just presented, and last week we heard the board's concern for conservation of environmental issues and Mr. Friedrich's concern for conservation of environmental issues. And with that in light, we would like to request that before the final consideration of 280, and we would request that you do have a third hearing, that Prairie Rivers of Iowa be consulted and that they be allowed to deliver a presentation to the public, specifically looking at this housing density and the impacts it may have on the Squaw Creek watershed, looking at the limited number of acres and the number of impervious services that will be placed on this acreage. We would like to have their input and the impact it may have on the Squaw Creek watershed. With that said, I understand, Mr. Sanders, that you serve on the board of Squaw Creek Prairie Rivers, both. So we would feel that since you were the one that presented the motion last week or the idea of 70 lots per 70 developable acres, there may be a conflict of interest presented there. So we would ask that maybe Supervisor Olson would be the one to consult with Prairie Rivers and that they be allowed to give a public report before the final reading. Thank you.
Oh, I have a question. Have you talked to Prairie Rivers about this already?
I have.
Okay, all right. And I see the director of Prairie Rivers out there. How would that time be paid for or that consultation be paid for?
I think it's due diligence of the county to do so.
Okay, so you're advocating that we would have do that.
I would certainly think so.
We employ Prairie Rivers by contract.
I understand that.
Okay, got it.
I understand that.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, John, I appreciate it. It's a really interesting concept that Prairie Rivers would become a gatekeeper for activities in Story County. When I have not seen, I mean, I see Story County Conservation as more of that entity for Story County, and Prairie Rivers is really that entity that takes the facts on the ground, in this case specifically Squaw Creek watershed, and does the best we can do with those facts. But I've never viewed, so Mike Cox is our director of conservation, is also a member of the Prairie Rivers board, and I've never seen to this point in my experience Prairie Rivers as their responsibility being directing what happens on a property. It's simply to take properties we have within the watershed, specifically the floodplain of the Squaw Creek watershed, and try to make sure that we've got the most environmentally friendly practices there. You see it a lot differently than that, Mike, I would ask. And then I would just look at Penny. And Penny, do you understand Prairie River's role differently than I'm suggesting it is? Or okay. Yeah, so, John, I appreciate that. I find that asking Prairie Rivers to do something that Prairie Rivers is not charged to do as a representative of the county. If we're going to do something like that, I would suggest it would be our conservation that moves through that. And, in fact, that's the way I understand this has all been put together. Kurt, I think you and conservation have been meeting regularly in development of this proposal, and I would fully expect conservation to weigh in. You're going to want to protect not only that watershed but those prairie remnants. And if you see something, I'm looking at Mike Cox right now, if you see something going forward on this plat that you feel like doesn't do that, I would expect that you would speak up at that point.
I want to acknowledge, sure. You know, what your concern about, you know, with a supervisor sitting on the board and also our conservation director sitting on that board. So I just had brought that up just 6 weeks ago or whatever, just as I was trying to look at some things moving forward into the new year. So I understand your concern, because there's always, when you see that interconnectedness, and you wonder at what point, you know, is there influence. Now, on to your request itself, okay? I wouldn't even know if Prairie Rivers, if we considered that, if that would be through the watershed, in which case the Squaw Creek Watershed Board, I believe, would need to vote on having their staff weigh in separately, okay? And so then we're back to if Prairie Rivers came in as a consultant on that, and you suggested conferring with me as a substitute. I mean, but I'm thinking it's more along the lines of if Prairie Rivers were talking to, once again, conservation, because I agree with Supervisor Sanders that conservation, along with environmental health to a degree, and, you know, even planning and development staff, they all are tasked with turning a discerning eye, okay? I don't want critical is a bad word, but a discerning eye to that. So
I think that that would be if any of those staff reached out to Prairie Rivers and asked questions on that, would be probably the way to go with our staff querying Prairie Rivers about concerns. But I would, you know, so I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with going out and engaging Prairie Rivers separately on it. That's my response on it.
I get the feeling this is a request, and it's just how it strikes me. I think you did a very fine job last week. You have only added to that. I think we're fortunate to have a room full of people that you educated on a takeaway basis. When I listen to this request, it's kind of stepping away from the fact that we have had the run-up in this process through the Planning and Zoning Commission, and you're almost asking us to seek counsel from another group on a peer basis in that sense. And the thing is, as where I get comfort in the fact that what I saw, what I listened to, and what I've been made aware of is that our Conservation Board has been there on a conduit between the organizations that you propound and them to us. And I think everybody has been full-throated in the information that they provided to get to the point that we are where we are today. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't see merit in what you're saying, because the thing is, it is in a place where it's just like, yeah, it is a bit of a stretch, and I do get that. But I think that the plan is espoused in the fact that the majority of the property will not be developed, I think has saliency in my mind.
Yeah, and then the other thing I would say, John, to your concern, and I'm like Marty, I appreciate the concerns you brought forward, and you know, you've been really thorough and really eloquent in bringing them forward, and I sure appreciate them. But we are still at the rezoning portion, and it seems to me that until we see, okay, so unless we move beyond this point and then start to see kind of some final proposed plats where we're actually going to know what we're talking about in terms of hard surface, where hard surface, what's going on, we're really premature in trying to divine what it might look like before we take step one first. And this is step one. So that's where I think I am in all this. Sure appreciate your comments. Anything further for Mr. Johnson?
No, I have nothing.
Mr. Johnson, thank you very much.
If I might make one comment. I would certainly think that you would want to solicit expert consultation in a situation like this, and it would disappoint me if you do not. My question to you would be, you've already proposed one lot per developable acre. If you go through your final hearing without hearing from Prairie Rivers, then that is set in stone, and it cannot be amended?
It's all based on maximums, and this does not lock the county into automatically approving any plat. Jerry, I'm going to look at you and Jessica. This action to rezone and redo some maps in the C2C does not bind the county to say, hey, whatever's presented, we're just going to be okay with. It's intended to give a framework for the developer to put together that initial plan, at which time, Mr. Johnson, I would agree with you. We need as much expertise as possible. I don't think I agree with you that we hand off county responsibilities to outside entities, but I think it's fully reasonable to expect our Planning and Development Department and our Conservation Department to work with expertise like Prairie Rivers is phenomenal, but work with the expertise offered by an entity like Prairie Rivers to make sure that we're considering everything we need to consider before we get to any kind of final approval. But don't mistake last week's action or today's potential action as certifying what anything that's going to happen in the future. It's simply intended to give the ability for the applicant to start to design, more than conceptual design, the ground.
Okay, I admit I am naive to the process, but I might just ask Mr. Cox, have you consulted with Prairie Rivers?
Please come up, Mike.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I think we're inserting Prairie Rivers in a position of authority in the county that Prairie Rivers does not have. But go ahead.
I'm not asking them to be a county, but they are listed as the county watershed agent. Correct?
They're the Squaw Creek Watershed Agent. Story County is a member of the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority.
Squaw Creek
and Story County has a great relationship with Prairie Rivers, but we're also very careful to make sure that Prairie Rivers handles what Prairie Rivers handles and County Conservation handles what County Conservation handles.
I will back up, though, Mr. Johnson. We did pass a proclamation naming Prairie Rivers as our official watershed agency, I believe, and I may be using the wrong term, agency. I'm looking at the attorney here because I remember we had a discussion about it. I was concerned about doing that. So you are correct. We've designated them in some official capacity. I want to acknowledge that. I don't know whether that carried over to any legal connection.
No,
but, absolutely not.
I look at my attorney for that. But I just,
All right, Mike, what do you got?
So as much as Rick has, and his, Loris has already said, Prairie Rivers does an exceptional job in the community and with our watershed management authorities. We work with them regularly in water quality work. It is not part of our standard operating procedures to get consultation from Prairie Rivers on any of our land use or zoning, rezoning requests or development requests. That is not part of our operating procedures. And I did not do that with this one.
Right.
I feel that the Conservation Board has the expertise on board, and that is in their purview to watch over those regulatory issues or land use issues in the best interest of the county.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike. Mr. Johnson.
Nothing further.
Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to follow up on his question, though, about whatever action we take today or on a third reading, if we, you know, depending on which way we go there, that once these conditions are in here on the rezoning, that is correct. The 70 maximum does apply, and I'm asking it as a question, either to legal or to our P&D department staff. Right? He is correct.
Yeah, that's why we did that, so that there would be no questions about what would be submitted when we got to the preliminary plat.
Right, but it works the opposite way also. As long as it's 70, he's okay. We can't go back later on the preliminary plat and all of a sudden say, well, water quality, additional concerns about water quality have come up, so now we're only going to go with 54, correct? We locked into 70 for him also, right? That's what you were asking, correct?
That's true, and if that is true, then I do have a concern about not doing this consultation prior to the final hearing.
Yeah, and so absolutely, and Loris, I don't see it that way. I see it as what we've done is we've given the developer the guidelines for the developer to work on these maximum plans, but we aren't certifying that we're going to approve any kind of final plat. If a final plat comes forward and conservation says, this is going to kill all the upland prairie that we're so interested in protecting, I would fully expect the board to have issue with that. And so to me, it's not as simple. And Kurt, I just ask you, I mean, are you walking out of this thinking that if we approve this, you get to just design whatever plat you want to design for those 70 acres and it just automatically gets approved? Because I don't think you are.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I would point to the fact that on Dr. Rosberg's study was a partial study.
Right.
We have that still yet to be determined in regards to what the spring prairie remnants would be. And Kurt, I believe, addressed some flexibility in that sense, and Mike has already spoken to that in his capacity. For we're not done as far as saying that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kurt, but there was some plus minus on where some of this lotting would be in regards to what that final study offers. And I know that does not speak to the water quality issue as you're addressing it, but I would have to say that the county is still, this is something, a study in motion in regards to what it could become.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further discussion, is there anybody else who'd like to address this as part of the public hearing? We're still in public hearing. Anybody else? Seeing no one move the microphone, I'll close the public hearing board. Thoughts, comments, or direction for us?
I appreciate you asking the questions and for clarity. I think it's always good on the clarity. I do believe we always have the right that if there's a concern that comes up later on that really changes facts, changes impact, that we always have the right to say stop. Okay. The question is how much more, I think you're asking, is of the process do we want to go through at this point for just the rezone? And I feel comfortable with the discussions and the vetting that has occurred right now for the rezone. And I think that Mr. Friedrich has done something and tried to be very open. It wasn't required that he have conceptual drawings, et cetera, and done some of the preliminary work already on that. So, and that's where I get some comfort from also, just to let you know about that. But we always do have, given a really large material fact change or real concerns from the staff moving forward, we always have the ability to say no later on.
Yeah, I think that's all true. And the other thing I would point out is every single person who has been involved in this process has indicated a real interest and desire to marry our very real need for housing with environmental and water quality concerns. And I don't believe, so Mr. Friedrich is the one who came forward with the initial concept of how is it possible for us to do something a little different in Story County that incorporates conservation practices and water quality issues. And I suggested right away that he visit with Mike Cox, which he did. I've been really pleased with how this process has gone. But, Mr. Johnson, to your point, don't mistake this for the end of the process, because we're not at the end of the process. This is the beginning of the process to simply give a developer comfort in going ahead and closing on property to start to try to put something like this together.
I was struck because it was, if you got the opportunity to see the room as we saw the room up here, when Mr. Johnson had such a profound choice on what he was to do with this property, that it was like a 100-mile-an-hour wind went through this room as people sat up, and the hallway reflected that very same emotion. And I was hoping to hear something to that effect, because this is not the only choice before the developer or the property owner, and nobody spoke to that. And I was maybe not surprised, but I'm thinking it's just like, as we sat here and kind of lurch or lean towards one outcome, clearly there were several choices on the table. And I think, and I would like to make the point of order that Cindy Hildebrand did a nice job of making the motion that we adopted last week.
Much to Cindy Hildebrand's consternation, I think. I don't think you ever expected, Cindy, that you would suggest that we do something like this, but it was the best of alternatives that we had. Thank you.
Might I just ask, you know, since it seems so...
Come up so we can get you on the tape, please, Mr. Johnson.
You know, I understand what you're saying about the emotion, because it seemed to me as though there was a great deal of emotion that was put forth in the room, and that it may have had a definite impact on the way the ruling occurred. But, you know, as I look at it, I sit here and see you as being the group of people that would have had the say in his two options. And had he come forward and said, I'm going to put five vehicles on this property, since you're not going to rezone it, you could have told him no.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of authority, as we proved in last week's meeting. And the thing I'll say about your premise that emotion in any way influences this board, if that were true, we would have ruled differently than we ruled on the second item at the end of our agenda last week. I can promise you, emotion's not entering into anything this board does.
I've read your reading there. But I just, that struck me as something that was, you know, as almost as you were being held hostage, either this or that. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I don't view it that way at all. I am one of those, so I fully recognize that Story County has a housing shortage, especially kind of that mid-range, what I consider mid-range, the one that not first homes necessarily, but where people who are in their first homes go to. And I also know how many places in the county have a piece of property that is on hard surface road, both east-west, hard surface road north-south. There, I mean, Jerry, there aren't many places in the county. And so when you can start to marry those two issues with a very real desire to protect the environment and do something unlike anything we have in Story County, you're going to find a willing ear from me. Not willing in that I'm just going to approve whatever, but very willing in that I'm going to look for solutions wherever I can look for solutions. And I think that's true of this board, and I think that's going to be true of our board in 2019. Jerry, anything further for us before we take action?
We just appreciate the board's input in helping craft the final conditions.
Absolutely. All right, so we've got Ordinance 280 and Resolution 1947 to act on.
I would move that we adopt Resolution Resolution 1947
and Ordinance 280.
And Ordinance 280 as presented today, and that we set the third reading for December 26th.
No, that's a pro forma meeting.
It does. We cannot even add one agenda item to it. Okay, well, sorry, that was trying to be my compromise here. So then that takes us to the earliest would be, well, our organizational meeting is January 2nd, so that takes us to January 8th. But that's a limited agenda. It does not preclude
limited agenda doesn't preclude us.
Yeah. That's, you know, otherwise we're to the 15th.
No, there's another option.
Yes.
We can waive the
The second reading.
The third reading. This is the second reading. We spent 2.5 hours last week.
I haven't seen where the needle got moved today.
It's not like there's new information coming to us.
Okay. So,
I've got a motion.
With waiting third reading.
No. Let's deal with your motion, with the one. And I'm waiting for a second, and I'm not hearing a second, so now that dies for lack of a second. Now, is there any other motions?
Would you like another swing at this one?
Sure. Okay. All right. I move that we approve as presented both the ordinance and the resolution, and we waive third reading.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. All this is a rezoning and a map amendment. Please, 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 anybody listening, don't mistake this for there's going to be bulldozers out there. That's not where we are. We're simply getting to the point that we get to start to look at plans, and Mr. Friedrich is going to be working closely with Mr. Cox and Mr. Moore in order to start to pull something together for this board, for our next board to consider in 2019. That's all that's happening. Everybody good, board?
Yes.
Motion and a second to approve second reading and waive third and final reading. Supervisor Olson?
Aye.
Supervisor Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. We waive third and final reading. Thank you. Next is discussion and consideration of professional services agreement with WHKS and Company for 150th Street Bridge Crossing. Is Darren here? Oh, there he is. I missed you.
Darren, where is Darren?
How's the ribs?
Slow process.
Yes, it is.
Okay, yes, I'm here with professional service agreement for this bridge. The project's already in the five-year program. There's money budgeted to cover this, but there's some things going on behind the scenes why I wanted to bring it to you for a little discussion. Here's a picture of the bridge on 150th. It's a 154-foot-long bridge built in 1920, so we got 100 years of good service out of it.
We did.
I would comment we have two of these high trusses left in the county with the top on them like that. This other one is just a couple miles downstream at Soper's Mill. Neither one of them are historic at this point. In my mind, if we want to keep one around, the Soper's Mill area is more of a historic area in my mind if we want to keep one in the county for historic purposes. But moving on, the reason why this is on the agenda now It's in the program in 2023. That's 5 years down the road. I want to get it designed on the shelf, and I'll bring up the reasoning for that a little bit later. This is the last inspection report on that bridge. The fracture critical. We're trying to get rid of those bridges in the county. What that means is there's not a lot of redundancy built into that bridge. So if one part of that bridge goes bad, the whole bridge is going to collapse. And there's additional inspection requirements for that that they're somewhat costly. Our bridge inspectors always like to get rid of these bridges when possible. There's heavy pack rust on it. There's some horseless piling. And as you can see, that our bridge inspector's recommendation is to keep it in the program. That's what pack rust is. That used to be flat, and it expands and pushes it out over time. There's really no good fix for that type of damage. Now, let me get to the reason why I want to advance this project. This is where it is on 150th Street south of Story City. This project right here on E18 is another bridge. There's a program we're working with the DOT on. There's federal funding available for 25 states, and we've put a big package together. We're asking for $46 million of bridge funding with the federal government. And this bridge is identified in Story County as one we could add in that application because we had it ready to go. This is the proposal. These are all the bridges in the state of Iowa we're putting in that proposal. What the feds are looking for is a bridge bundling program where you let multiple projects together in one contract and hopefully get better pricing. So that bundling means two or more. This is our bridge here. The proposal that was sent to the federal government was we would tie with the Franklin County Bridge. So we just have two bridges in our program. We're supposed to get a response sometime in mid-January if we get approved for this, and that would almost fully fund, well, at least 75% of this bridge, and the other 25% would come out of our farm market account. But the other unique part, if we do get approved, one of the counties is going to have to take the lead on it. This is something that's never happened before. So essentially, if we're the lead, we're going to have to approve a contract for a Franklin County bridge and run the funding through Story County. But they're both on farmer market routes, so we'll be able to do that through our farmer market account. So there won't be local dollars involved. That'll help things, but it'll be a new, unique type of thing we've never done before. But this is a good way to fund that bridge. I understand you can't read this, but this is our federal funding spreadsheet from the DOT. Story County's here. We get about $350,000 a year in federal bridge funding, and we're about a zero balance right now. Our balance will build up by the end of FY19. This column is you cannot build up over 3 years of bridge funding, or it gets dispersed back to the other counties. If we see some numbers in this column, that's the monies that get dispersed to other counties. Nobody wants to give up their bridge money and give it to other counties. So that bridge on E18 is scheduled for the federal aid money, and so that money could get funded by the federal government with special funds. That's going to open up funds, which would put us in jeopardy of losing money
if we don't have a project ready to go.
So that's why I want to get this one designed and on the shelf, ready to go if we get this approved.
And worst case scenario, let's say we don't get it approved, but we go ahead and design it. Will the designs be good through 2023 when we're talking about replacing this? So what I'm hearing is we would go ahead and design it. It'd be ready for 2023, but if something happens with federal funding that we're able to shift this bridge forward into 2020 or 2021 in order to protect some of our federal dollars, we would then have the ability to pull the plan out and use it.
Correct.
Board, questions or comments?
This is just a common sense thing that we do on our own behalf, for the fact is nothing's worse as an agency to have to return dollars you have a use for. So I would say thank you for a very simple to take up narrative.
And it's up to $48,000 that we could be spending on this design, but it's $48,000 that we would spend at some point.
Correct. I do want to point out another reason I want to get this going is this requires a DNR permit. Skunk River is the only river in Story County that requires a DNR permit, and that takes a lot of extra time. Another reason to get this on the shelf and get it designed ahead of time.
My question to you, as you see the arch bridge that came off of Southeast 16th just setting back by the skunk there, what will become of this bridge?
That's a good question. We haven't got that far yet. The single span on very long spans would be very difficult to move. It's very expensive to move these old structures. It's been done. But if a park has a use for it, we could go down that route, check it out, but it gets very expensive to move these, I'll tell you that.
No, this bridge, when it is replaced, the old bridge becomes available to anybody.
Yeah. Especially if you saw the connections are all rusted, you wouldn't be able to take it apart. Sometimes they take them apart, but this one would not be able to be taken apart. It's riveted.
But leaving it there also, is that an environmental problem in the long run?
As part of our project, it would be removed. We'd keep the same alignment. So
yeah, we would destroy it. The existing bridge, we would destroy it, and it'd be scrap.
Okay.
Right. Unless what Marty's pointing out is, if some right. other entity wanted it and could transport it, that would be. Okay. But we're not just going to leave it sitting.
Okay, I will. All right. Thank you. Thanks for being proactive on this. And thinking ahead.
Any other questions for Darren as in regards to the bridge?
No.
All right. Do I have a motion?
So move that we approve the professional services agreement between WHKS in an amount not to exceed $48,000.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Darren, anything else for us today?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Next, discussion and consideration of replacing a heat pump at the Justice Center for $6,930. And while we're at it, our next item is going to be discussion of relocating district associate judge in order to create some additional county attorney space. So I'll just have you guys both there. Let's deal with the heat pump first.
Okay, sounds good.
Good morning, Joey.
Good morning. It's another one of our heat pumps at the Justice Center that can't get parts for. It's, we just replaced the one that sits next to it just a few months ago. Was the other half of the main entry at the Justice Center.
And remind us how many of these we have over there?
Over 100.
Yep. So just be aware that this is dominoes, right? We're going to see this go.
Yep.
Questions or comments, board, on this $6,930 for a heat pump?
None.
Unbudgeted at this point. We're planning on you absorbing this into your budget?
This one, yep. Right now we are.
All right. Take a motion.
I would move that we replace the heat pump number 10 at Justice Center for $6,930, and we would take that out of Joey's 2019 budget.
Yeah, Joey will continue to manage his budget. Do I have a second?
Perfect.
Motion in the second. Chief Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now let's talk about the possibility of county attorney space in the Justice Center.
Yes. So the request is to relocate the district associate judge from courtroom 1C and its associated judges' chambers up to an unused courtroom on the second floor, which is courtroom 2C. The basis of this request is a little background on it, because this would potentially free up some space on first floor that is directly connected to the county attorney's office. And it's no secret that they are kind of bursting at the seams in their office right
now. And have been since day one.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's a good way to, there's currently a kind of a project in the works of infilling the courtyard at the Justice Center. It's on the books in FY19 and planning stages. Well, the county attorney's office is a major stockholder in that plan. So we could potentially save a large amount of tax dollars if we could allocate the space from courtroom 1C to the county attorney's office. So there would be some associated costs with relocating the judge from courtroom 1C to 2C, and that's primarily to make courtroom 2C look just like courtroom 1C. There's a half wall. Gave you guys some pictures because I tried to put them on the screen, and they didn't look very well. So
give us 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and it'll look
it's
good.
It's getting close.
That's right.
So
we'll actually be able to see what's projected.
So it would be taking out a wall, moving some of the furniture from courtroom 1C up to 2C, and then for some security reasons to make the current, help me with this.
Judge Curry, District Court Judge Curry.
Judge Curry. We'd add a doorway right to basically the EDC, and I think it's picture labeled CA2. The door that's closed would be
the judge's chamber is associated with courtroom 2C, and then the next doorway would be Judge Curry's judge chambers. So we just basically build a wall right across there.
Just separate those two.
Yeah, just to separate them, have Bob access on it. So total cost to do it, about $18,000. The majority of that is to recarpet the courtroom once we remove a wall and
which needs to be done anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, it's on the schedule for FY22 to replace the carpet in that courtroom anyway, so it would just be a couple of years earlier.
County Attorney Reynolds, thoughts?
Thank you. Well, good morning. I just wanted to thank Joby and his staff for being in consultation with my office regarding this. I'd also like to thank District Associate Judge Steve Owen and District Court Judge Bethany Curry for their cooperation as we look at the space in the Justice Center. To me, this is a real no-brainer. The County Attorney's Office, it's not a secret that my prior boss and myself, we have expressed concerns about our space needs. This board's been very wonderful in discussing that and viewing that with us. And what we've had is some turnover in our judiciary, and that's led to a lot of openness and cooperation between the judiciary and my office. The district court space upstairs is extremely large. I don't know if you've been through there, but they have a lot of square footage, and there's an unused courtroom. And thanks to District Associate Judge Steve Owen, who understands the needs of the space and says, well, there's a courtroom right above me with chambers, why can't I just move up there? He's happy to do that. And that's going to lead to me withdrawing my request to the capital improvement plan for the addition of any county attorney office space, which is over $3 million request. And so we're going to spend this $18,000, and then I'm going to have adequate space, and then we're going to look at what that would cost to remodel. But it will be vastly less than doing the Justice Infill project. So I'd just like to thank everyone for their cooperation. I think this is a no-brainer from a taxpayer perspective. I like that we have a team at the courthouse that can work together in the best interest of the taxpayer.
I think it's well said, and I would just underscore. So we've got space issues in several places. We don't have any space issues like we have and have had for years with the county attorney's office. And this, I think County Attorney Reynolds undersells it. This is such a wise use of taxpayer dollars from my point of view, simply by moving a judge and creating a similar courtroom in a different spot. Now, you know, there's only one courtroom whose wall backs up to the county attorney's office, and the chambers with the hallway offers a thing. Right now, our county attorneys don't have a private bathroom to use. They have to use the public bathroom, which is problematic when you're in the middle of a trial and things like that. And it gives us the opportunity to address all of those things probably at about a tenth of the cost. And I'm not trying to put numbers on what our total remodel is going to be, but probably about a tenth of the cost of what we were talking about doing out front. The other thing I want to underscore for this board and a future board is it does not alleviate some issues that we have at the front of the Justice Center building in terms of security and the entrance there, but it becomes an entirely different project that we'd be talking about by utilizing this opportunity. And then final thought, and then I'd ask the board to take immediate action, is these opportunities only present themselves because of turnover within the judiciary. And it's a limited window before people in the judiciary start to get used to having the amount of space they currently have, even if they don't need it. And if you don't believe that, go look at how some of the offices over there are used as storage right now in these areas. We need to act on this, I believe, and we need to act quickly in order to make it all happen.
Agreed.
I agree. I actually have more concern as far as the heat pumps when I do this. I think this is a win. I thank Judge Owen, Judge Curry, for the fact that they realize that they have something they can do on behalf of Story County that is substantial. And one of the first stories I heard when I came to the board was the fact that we're using the same bathroom that the people we're trying to put in jail. And it's just like, well, that would be awkward. So,
as well as jurors, we have victims using the same bathrooms, as well as jurors and defendants and witnesses. It's not workable long term, and I just appreciate that everyone acknowledges that.
correct me if I'm wrong, I think it also, you have staff that needs to be in Nevada that currently reside in Ames because of your space needs.
That's correct. So that will eliminate all of that. We'll be able to have a conference room that all of the attorneys can fit in at one time for a staff meeting, and I'm just really excited at the taxpayer savings and the way that it's going to change operations for the better in our office and safety for the better in our office.
I think Rick would, where I would leave it is where Rick just mentioned here, in the fact that still there will be a Justice Center project. This allows the scope of it and hopefully the dollars to be lessened going forward. So there's nothing not to like about this, and I think it's great, and I'm glad to see that you got us to the point today we can move on.
It's a big time work by County Attorney Reynolds and Joby to get us to this point. Now it's up to us. Other questions, comments, or I would sure take a motion.
I move that we approve the changes at the Justice Center as presented by the two today in the approximate amount of $18,000.
I second that with the dollars are coming from where? I guess I never did hear that.
Yeah, I would say we haven't worked that out yet. There's multiple places that it could come from. I would suggest that we allow the new board to work with County Attorney Reynolds to start, because this isn't all the dollars we're spending. This is the initial dollars to move Justice Owen upstairs.
Correct.
Then we're going to talk about some dollars to actually make the space usable for the County Attorney's Office, and I take that as a bigger, broader conversation.
Agreed.
That the board needs to have with County Attorney Reynolds and Joby in order to pull all of this together. So I would suggest that we go forward with the $18,000. Joby, it's just out of your budget at this point, recognizing that it's going to be part of a bigger conversation that the board's going to need to have.
Okay.
That addresses my concern.
Good?
Good.
Okay.
So.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. The one other caveat I'm going to throw in is this also ultimately, I believe, changes the use of the existing law library, and we need to keep that in mind as we move forward with whatever proposals we come back with. Good? Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great job. Next, discussion consideration of our draft of annual report, Leanne Hart. So this is something that the Board of Supervisors now has done for 3 or 4 years, and it's always been received with really positive reviews, both from people inside Story County and outside of Story County. And this is just the latest proposed version of that. Leanne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You do have two copies I provided for you this morning. And both are, one is a slight modification from what was on the agenda. And then one is, includes Loris's comments that you should have a sticky note that indicates the one that
yep.
has. And I don't think I've captured everything because I got that Friday, after Friday late. And there are some items in there like that we can go over as well. Just some quick changes on the one from the agenda till today. Nothing major other than the color changes. And I don't know how you want to do this. If you want, Loris, if you want to talk through your changes, proposed changes.
I know that there's multiple minor changes. For example, I'll give you one that I can think of off the top of my head. Supervisor Olson requested that in the welcome letter, the welcome message up front, that still comes from me because I'm the chair of the 2018 board, that my last paragraph says, as always, please call me if you have questions or concern. And Supervisor Olson, I think, appropriately requested, as always, please call any of the Board of Supervisors if you have questions or concerns. I think that it's a bunch of things like that that you have in here. Is there anything that you think is worth noting? Or, Leanne, I would go the other way. Is there anything that Supervisor Olson requested be changed that caused you any concern at all?
Well, there was a comment to rewrite the sensitive areas inventory. That was, I would have to reach out to Mike and Erica at Conservation. They did draft that and write that. Also, if you look on page 6 of the one with Loris's, the revision based on Loris's, you'll see Ragbri has been removed, the article regarding Ragbri.
Okay.
some changes on images. Backing up, though, on page 3, Laura, you did comment about the credit for the Jordan Acres photo. That is one that, for us to be able to use that, we do need to provide
credit. I wondered, I thought I noted just, but I did, I'm not surprised to hear that it's a copyrighted photo. That's fine.
And then on the last page, there is reorganization based on some rewriting, and I did talk to Todd Lumble, our risk manager, and he does not want his photo included.
Okay. Yeah, that's his, right?
All right, so then my question is RAGBRAI. So I recognize that that page looks a little condensed and you'd like to have the website updates a little bigger. My problem is RAGBRAI is a fairly big deal when it comes through here, and so I'd like to find a way to keep it included. That would be probably the only place that I come down and I say I prefer our draft over what Supervisor Olson has presented. Loris, I'd ask you to comment on that.
Well, if we're going to leave RAGBRAI in, first of all, we'll just need to put in the text. I would point out that the supervisors helped fund for $6,000. I can't, okay. And the reason that I indicated maybe RAGBRAI, the little section could be pulled, is that I think that staff has done an exceptional job of laying this out with everything we got done. I mean, this had to have been a hard layout job to get everything in, to make
it look.
Isn't
that cool that we're getting that much done?
It is, but I think it was probably very frustrating to get these little mini, you know, articles written and laid out. So it looks very good and very clean. I really did feel that the RAGBRAI kind of crowded the page. Page 6 is where it is. And instead, though, this was a nice photo of all young people, older people, the teacher who was Citizen of the Year.
Yep.
And I just felt that that had a much better message and interest other than, yeah, we gave $6,000 to RAGBRAI, and there was a lot of logistics stuff, you know, that was required by us. And so that's why I opted for that, is that it's a nice group photo showing a whole bunch of different residents in the county, including young people, and acknowledging our Citizen of the Year. So that was the difference.
And I hear that concern, and I think it's a valid concern. I just think RAGBRAI coming through is a big enough deal that it warrants a spot within our annual report. Marty, thoughts?
I mean, Laura, let me speak to your heart. We had what fundraising was done by Animal Control in our little petting. We obtained some dollars. We had adoptions from bikers.
Sure.
And I would like to think that's part, you know, well, this never made it to the test. We were a funder. We had multiple departments at the table and on a planning basis. It really was, the county was really at the table in regards to making this a seamless transition between communities as we passed it through the county and out. And I'm not going to really, this is not a hill I want to die on, but I would have to say, I would think with all that said, the county did a lot. Now, I get it. That's the Nevada FFA. Those are a lot of those kids. I know those kids and their parents and everything. And that is a great and wonderful story. We have an educator in this district that is that good. But to me, I don't think, having represented these kids and their parents for a lot of years, I don't feel cheated on the size of the picture. That is my opinion. Do with it what you will.
Yep.
My thought, if this would be a compromise, okay, would be then on the website updates, the blow-up of the graphic of the website is a nice blow-up, and maybe we just try to shove RAGBRAI as a text back in there and not show the route, and maybe cut down even a paragraph or two from the website updates. I'm trying to figure out how to shove both in there. Okay. So
it is what it is, but the thing is, there's clearly more to the RAGBRAI story than you see in that little text, in the sense that we did a lot of planning on ourselves. We designated people to plan with and before that run-up, and I think some of what we did.
Yeah, so I think what Laura suggests is workable. What I would suggest is we try to reduce the RAGBRAI notation, and instead of the route, which is fine, I'd like to see a small picture of people on bicycles.
Right. Actually, that was my note.
And see if you can see if Leanne, then you can buy some a little bit of space to increase what you have on the website updates, and if you can find a little for the citizen of the year. I actually, visually, I like the message that having a very crowded, busy annual report sense, because the reality is we have been very busy. We have gotten a lot done, and it should feel like we're trying to pack stuff in here, and it does feel.
Yeah, so. It does, and yet it's really a nice design. It's simple. It's easy for people to enter into. You've not overused color. Oh, now I'm getting in the weeds. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a good job.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Leanne, suggestions that we've made here workable to go ahead and get this finalized and out?
I want to make sure. Sure. Page 2, I did remove a couple pictures.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And blew up the rest, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then, Laura, she did note under the hazard mitigation plans to change jurisdictions to cities. I made the change. I think it does need to be jurisdictions
okay.
to cities
okay.
and school districts.
Okay.
Yep.
Are the
jurisdictions.
That's cool. One can over edit, too.
You run that risk. You do. You do.
So, I don't know that I'll have time to make the final revisions yet this week with focusing on floodplain maps.
This needs to get out the first week of January. It's such a timely document. We do our community report will happen sometime in January. There are lots of things recapping all of this. I know I'm going to want to have it available to go to new officer school for ISAC because I've got a lot of supervisors from around the state that are requesting this. And so for me, it's not, we don't have to have this out by the end of calendar year 2018, but we better have it ready to go by the end of calendar year 2018 so that we can get it going early in that night.
And there are already, they set the date for the State of the Community, and a couple of service groups have contacted me about So anyway, once again, very, very, very good job in handling what is just an avalanche of information.
Now I just hope the public reads it.
Some will.
Great.
Some will. As I've said to Supervisor Olson many times, it's not our responsibility for them to read it. It's our responsibility to make sure they have the opportunity to read it if they so choose.
Okay. So this is more directional than
anything else for us, or do you have enough to be able to finish that off?
Okay.
Super. Next is discussion and consideration of the countywide watershed assessment implementation matrix.
Mike, want to come join me? You're welcome to join me. I'm going to just start with some background information. And I did invite Mike to come up here because he might have some feedback on proposed budget implications. As you'll recall, we contracted with the EOR in the past almost 2 years now to start do watershed assessments on a countywide basis for Story County. That was received by the board in August following a joint meeting of Planning and Zoning Commission and the Story County Conservation Board. At that meeting in August, the board supervisors put together a working group and directed asked staff to come back with some implementation steps and strategies to bring the plan or the assessments to next step. That is what we did. The working group consisted of Deb Schildrath, Jerry Moore, Mike, and myself. And I appreciate Jerry and Deb's comments and involvement. And they can come join us as well up here if they'd like to. I just happened to be the one that was able to, put the things together and put it on the agenda. I want to just review the layout shortly with you and then talk about the overall goals on the top of the matrix. This did go to the Planning and Zoning Commission for review and recommendation on December 5th and the Conservation Board on December 10th. And then we'll conclude with any questions. My intention, nor I don't think is that Mike's to go through each action step, but we'll be glad to answer any questions.
And we should be completely clear. What we're talking about is the format that's here. We are not, while there's dollar amounts assigned of what this might cost, we are not binding any future board, particularly the one that starts January 2nd. to anything in here. We're simply saying this is the document that could go forward for discussion as we work through the budget and timeline of what we're going to do.
And this actually will be built into the C2C plan update at the end of January as well.
Which the new board of supervisors will get to approve. Okay.
Each item does include a priority, and that priority explanation is on page 7. We went back to the C2C plan for some inspiration and some guidance and brought those types of timeframes forward as part of the prioritization. There are estimated budget amounts, and honestly, I want to stress estimated. It just was really a best guess on many of our parts, and a lot of cases are the TBD because we at this point don't have any idea what that may be. And then we did identify responsible parties, like who would basically shepherd the item. So on the very top of the page, you'll see overall, there's a 5 bullet items, that kind of the overall goals of the assessment or the implementation matrix. It states, recognizing the county watershed assessments conducted in 2018 were developed to serve as a starting point in guiding future watershed management decisions as a high-level overview of where we are at this point in time. First bullet point, work to identify where further study is needed. Second is to discuss whether prioritizations and assessments should be modified. Third, identify who oversees the effort and strategies. Fourth, establish a schedule for development watershed management authorities. And five, define and dedicate ongoing resources for further study and implementation. So the working group really felt, or the staff felt, that was these were larger than a specific implementation step, and that these all really need to be decided or thought put into each of these items to really take it to the next level. Do you want to add to that, or is that
good?
So with that, are there any questions on what I presented or what is before you this morning?
Question or comments, board?
I have one. I don't know if it's a question or a comment, but over in the category that says identifiable funding source, and then you have a yes or no or TBD to be determined, but where you have yeses, had you guys actually identified that funding source and just chose not to put it in, or was it a more generic, just like, yeah, we think we know where the money's coming from?
The latter part, yes, we can identify a funding source. We know they're out there, but there's also possibly a multitude of several.
Okay, got it. Thank you. That was my only question.
Yes. Okay. Marty, questions or comments? I am still mentally back in the last conversation we had on the Dodson property in regards to the reference to watersheds and the agreements we find ourselves in, both on a funding basis and on presence in them. And how we use that information, I know we will move this into next year to the C2C and whatnot. It's just like, I guess, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Mike, but it's just like when you do your, as you're brought into the conversation in regards to a property moving into another capacity, you take, in fact, that information and then apply it in your calculations. Would that be a fair statement in regards to the way that the determination of the information that is brought about by these watersheds is used in some of the, as a metric or a set of metrics in what you arrive at as far as suggestions?
If I understood you right, the products of this assessment, yes, we look at in any time I review from the natural resource perspective, anytime we review a rezone or a land use change, a subdivision request, etc., being part of the interagency review team, I take a look at those and say, and look at the products that were developed here, and which Prairie Rivers helped develop, particularly the agricultural conservation planning framework guidelines that say, essentially, here's the whole county, and where in the county should we place buffer strips? Where should we place saturated buffers, bioreactors? Where do, maybe it's terraces, but where do these conservation practices need to be on the land? Those are are identified in the tools that we received with the assessment, and so those are things that we look at in making these kinds of recommendations.
Does that answer your question?
That goes a long way to my suspicion was the fact that this is not information derived in a vacuum and left to in a dark room, that you do avail yourself to it and use it.
Well, so the I think it's such a great point, because the beauty is, so we spent $72,000, I think it's $72,000, to do these watershed assessments. And the big question is, okay, that's great. We did it. We're the first county that did it. All of that stuff. But now, what are you going to do with it? And this is, so there's two things that you do with it. One is tangible and one's intangible. And the intangible we're already doing. It's another tool in our toolbox to assess everything that comes before us. And Dotson is a good example that we're going to use what's in this watershed assessment, but more importantly, some of the evaluation tools that were created as part of this assessment to make sure that we're moving forward in the right way. That's the intangible of what we got out of spending that $72,000. The tangible is, okay, what projects should the county be focusing on through conservation or on its own, should the county be focusing on to get done? And that's what we're talking about here with this plan. And it's simply intended, as I see it, to give a framework for the Board of Supervisors for how we go through making some of these decisions. That's one component. The other component, which Mike rightly points out that we're already using, is the tools that were developed. And I would think Prairie Rivers is using some of those tools that EOR developed as part of this watershed assessment, that now we get to take a more focused look at practices on the ground, which lead potentially to good things.
Thank you for your answer, though, Mike. That's kind of what I thought, but it was nice to hear the depth and the details.
Okay.
So I did want to point out, if it is a high priority item and there's a budget item associated with it, you will see those showing up in the fiscal year 2020 request in some manner, whether it be through conservation, or I did share these with Alyssa, and those would be in countywide or in another area of the proposed budget.
Absolutely. But that will be something that the Board of Supervisors will get to deal with through the due course of our budget conversations. This does not automatically tie dollars to anything. Further questions, comments, or direction?
Remove consideration of the draft of the countywide watershed assessment implementation matrix as it was presented to us today.
I second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thank you, guys. Thanks. Next is consideration request from Iowa DNR to award a construction contract for Hickory Grove Lake Boy, it feels like we've been working on this project forever. And like any project that you work on forever, things tend to get a little more expensive, especially when you start noticing all the things that need to get done. That's kind of what we get to talk about. Well, more than kind of. That's what we get to talk about here today, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning again.
Good morning, and thank you. It seems like we have been working on this for a while, and we're not done. We will continue to work on it. Excuse me. Ted is joining this morning also, and appreciative to all the efforts that he has put into Hickory Grove and water quality in the county. You guys have heard us talk about Hickory Grove in the past. In a nutshell, we recognized over a decade ago that we had significant problems at Hickory Grove and needed to clean up the water. We took measures at that point to reach out to many different stakeholders. I can't begin to list them all, from Soil and Water Conservation District to Prairie Rivers to Iowa State to state agencies, etc., in how we develop a kind of an action plan, like we just discussed with our assessment, but an action plan specific to that watershed. We have a 4,000-acre watershed there. And so we've put some significant resources into kind of studying that and developing an action plan for improving the watershed. Okay, so that identified some very tangible steps that needed to be taken, some of the causing agents of the problems that we had in the lake, and steps that needed to be taken to mitigate those. And then, one of the final goals in that action plan is, well, then after we get, if you will, to steal an analogy from someone, one of our partners at the state,
we know we have nutrient inflow problems, etc. Well, we've kind of turned the faucet off on those inflows into the lake, or at least significantly turned it down to a drip. And now it's time to take work to do what we need to in the lake. Didn't make sense to do lake work prior to mitigating those inflows. So we've got that done, and now it's time to take a look at the lake. So, you know, we've been doing that for the last, the last couple of years. We've probably been in some level of design, and we've taken some previous steps to do some more shoreline repair, some gully repair, and soil erosion mitigation. We've got that done. And now it's time to take a concerted look at getting the lake itself cleaned. And so we're fortunate to have DNR, their Lakes Restoration Program, as a partner in this project. They have, from day one, been incredible partners, and they are carrying the lion's share of the funding burden on this, clearly. And so we're very appreciative of them doing that. We have received bids on the project right now to go ahead and drain the lake, finish the draining of the lake, and then do the dredging and make some what we think is some really exciting accessibility improvements and usage improvements. So a new boat ramp.
Yeah.
New accessible parking area, two new boat ramps. And so really some neat improvements as far as access, recreational use of the lake. In addition, making the island a little bit bigger and putting the causeway and associated bridge out to that island to allow people to get out and enjoy that island as well. That also helps us with some ancillary things that we know we need to improve at the lake. So that all said and done leaves us with the bids that were received by the state. The low bid on this was under engineer's estimate. So that's always good news. But in consultation with the state, we're recommending, and the state recommended that we approve to that, essentially what would have been to that engineer's estimate, which provides some contingency. And so in essence, that's what we're bringing forward. And that's what the Conservation Board has taken action on and recommended that we enter that agreement, that funding agreement with the DNR, as outlined in this memo. Short version of the funding story is that we don't have all of these funds dedicated in the FY19 budget. We have 562,000 currently identified in the FY19 budget. In order to move forward with this funding agreement, we need 942,000 to move forward with the funding agreement. That is the county's share of the roughly $3.3 million project. The reason why that is higher than what has been anticipated thus far, what has been budgeted thus far, is that earlier on we were going through some discussions with the DNR and looking at the scope of work that's done in this project. And there was quite a bit of interest early on in not dredging the east basin of the lake, which is that area east of 680th Avenue, and that's where, you know, that's the upper end of the lake. So most of the 75% of the water inflow to the lake comes through that east side, and so that's where a majority of the water comes from. That really is our essential sediment forebay that traps that sediment out before it goes into the main lake. And there's some residences built along the lakeshore on that side of the property So we have always been interested in A, building more capacity for the sediment forebay.
Which keeps it out of the main lake.
So essentially, and let me back up, that east basin is all but essentially silted in. It's over the years that the capacity in there, the silt coming in off of that watershed has filled that in. And so there's very little capacity in there moving forward, and it's to the tune of, in the one figure of years, so less than 10 years probably, of capacity in that east basin that's existing. So we knew we wanted to give that some serious thought and to dredge that out to expand that capacity. Yes, we've turned the faucet off to some extent, but it's not completely turned off. And we've addressed the low-hanging fruit with sediment erosion and deposition in the lake, but we haven't done everything. And there will continue to be erosion out of the watershed into the lake. We have slowed it down, but we haven't stopped it. So we know it was important from a functional standpoint of the lake, water quality standpoint of the lake, to do that dredging. Also, when we were doing public input on this, it became very apparent that the landowners along that lake really value open water condition back there, rather than what the alternative at that time was proposed as more of just a marsh or a wetland area with probably very little open water. And so it was very apparent through that process that was highly valued by those landowners to have open water. And I don't blame them for that regard. So with a combination of those two reasons, we moved forward with building the scope into this project to go ahead and dredge that area as well. So that is in here, and that's, I just gave you a long story for why that amount is greater than what we had budgeted. We estimated that portion of the project earlier on. We estimated that portion of the project to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $630,000 to do that dredging, based on $10 a cubic yard for dredge material. So this includes awarding the base bid and the alternates, which were the East Basin dredging.
And let's be clear on DNR's role in all this and my understanding of how we got where we got. So DNR, I think you said, expressed no interest in really doing having the East Basin as part of this project. And I think as we moved through, they started to rapidly recognize two things. One, on its own, working on the East Basin has some value, but even more importantly to DNR, getting the East Basin functioning properly as it was originally intended is so important to the overall health of the lake that DNR is investing quite a few dollars in, which all of a sudden made DNR get interested in that East Basin. And what it means to us is we actually have an opportunity to leverage some DNR dollars to do work that we weren't going to do now, but knew we were going to have to do, I think you said it, a factor of 1 year, but we were going to have to do in the years to come. That's the advantage to us of considering something like this.
Correct.
So may I just ask if my numbers are right then? So originally it was 500 and something thousand budgeted. We're at 942. I came up with $370,000 as the difference. But if we take into account that at some point the East Basin dredging was going to be another $600,000, this 370, while we have to advance it now in most likely this fiscal year, is going to make up for that 600,000 down the road.
Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we're
not only, and it's more than 600. But I think you're saying it right. I would say the one caution I'd give you is it's not 370,000, it's 380,000.
Well, my man.
Yep. Okay. And the other advantage that we have here, as I understand what conservation is proposing, they're saying, hey, we recognize that this is 380,000 that was not budgeted or planned on. This is an opportunity. So conservation has done a phenomenal job of leveraging those energy transfer partner reserve funds. We saw it in Jordan Acres. We see it again and again and again. But this is an opportunity to actually dip into some of those funds for an essential public purpose and not require quite as much general fund dollars flowing from the county.
So we have talked, the board has talked about, and I'll let Ted jump in here, but the board has talked about the potential of using that as a funding source to make up some of the shortfall. But where the board actually landed was using conservation reserve account to do this or to make up that shortfall. And what that is money that essentially is generated by the park through users of the park. And so essentially taking that money and putting it back into the park for this project, not using energy transfer, but using that reserve fund. So what the board had proposed was splitting that difference of $380,000. And again, that's if that 10% contingency is needed. If that contingency isn't needed, it's probably going to be somewhere around $150,000 a piece. And then moving forward with that. So, again, the board's recommending is that they cover $190,000, so the half of that, $380,000.
And let's call it the 50%, because I think that's important for the board to consider, is that whatever the overage, so we know we got $562,000 in there. We know that there's going to be an overage of somewhere between $300,000, if we go ahead, between $300,000 and $380,000. And I would think that if we were going to go forward, it would be important to just designate it. It's going to be 50-50. Conservation is going to figure out 50% of it. We're going to figure out 50% of it in the FY19 budget, fully recognizing that this project probably won't be completed in FY19, but that would become one of those carryover situations into 2020. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, I'm the shortfall side of things. I'm glad to see that Mike and conservation is willing to step up and say, because we're not a little pregnant on this, we're all in. And you just cannot walk away. And people, if you see people walking across the East Basin, that tells you how far it's sold in.
Well, we got pipes in the East Basin that were originally designed to be at the floor of the lake that are what, 8 or 10 feet?
15.
Now, you've got to do this. I guess Mrs. Markley sitting in the room, I was just wondering where we would find the difference.
Yeah, so it would come from one of two places as we go. If you vote for this, you better plan on it coming out of our reserves. But the reality is, the way our budget year is looking to this point, we may have some savings yet in FY19. And I'm not saying all the savings, but we may have some savings that we could lean on to fund this. Lisa, do you want to weigh in on this, or are you good with what's been stated? Okay.
Well, then, this is a long motion.
I think it's important. Okay. This is the jewel of Story County Conservation. It's a long time lake. I've fished this lake for years with the former supervisor, Don Toms, when Paula would let him go fishing with me. The East Basin was a very active part of this lake years ago.
Uh-huh.
I've seen this transition take place, and we are so concerned, wish Mr. Johnson was here, with water quality in the county as a whole, that we have had this opportunity to leverage the dollars to the maximum amount.
Absolutely.
To make this again the shining place. And it represents over $6 million of revenue to the county.
Well, and probably going to grow. And the other thing I'll say is, this has now become a project where we are, in essence, taking this lake back to new conditions. I mean, this is, it's been a long time coming that we would consider doing this. And I'm so appreciative to DNR that there's two things that's happened there. One, they recognize the value of Hickory Grove Lake, but even more than that, they recognize the investments that we in Story County, both the Board of Supervisors and Conservation, have made in water quality and specifically Hickory Grove Lake, and that's the reason that they're willing to invest the $3 million that they're willing to invest here in Story County.
I hope that you have the success in the latter half of FY 20.
Yeah, we're 19.
We're 19.
Yep. 19 that you hope to recover these dollars to offset the desire, but this is worthy of a motion, and if there's no other discussion, I'll make it.
Make it.
I would move that we act upon the request from the Iowa DNR Natural Resources to award a construction contract and funding agreement for the Hickory Grove Lake Restoration Project to RW Excavating Solutions, LC, not to exceed $942,239.53, and approve the funding agreement as it was discussed today.
I second.
Motion is second, and I'm just going to underscore for the record that funding agreement is 50% from conservation, 50% from the Board of Supervisors General Fund. Further discussion? Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for your continued support.
Thanks, Terry.
What do we do?
Glad to have you back on the Conservation Board, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next is the discussion and consideration of resolution 1951, Tall Hound Timber Residential Parcel Subdivision.
Yeah.
Amelia, we haven't seen you in forever. It's been Emily and Jerry coming up here. What's going on? They don't let you out of the basement?
Yeah. You're stuck down there. Let's see.
And Jolly, we will come to you after Amelia's presentation.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see if I can see my own PowerPoint from this far away.
So I want to tell everybody, when you come back here in the middle of January, this is going to look good. We're going to get a new projector. The wall is going to be done where we're actually going to project things, and you're actually going to be able to see what's going on. But for now, this is what we got.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the Tall Hound Timber Subdivision. It's a residential parcel subdivision. It's located on 563rd Avenue, two existing properties, and they each have existing single-family dwellings as well. So it's just outside of Gilbert. The districts are up there, but it's, South Skunk River Watershed, something we've been talking about today a lot. Okay, so again, this is a residential parcel subdivision of these two properties. One currently covers about all the sides of the other, and so the goal is just to adjust the boundary so that the view shed from this property is of property they own and control. So it's pretty simple, and it also meets all of our requirements for a residential parcel subdivision. So this is what it'll look like as proposed. So you can see this lot now owns the property behind them that they see when they look out their windows. So proposed lot one will have the existing single-family dwelling at 16631 563rd Avenue. It will be 1.95 net acres. I think currently it is 4.14 net acres. Proposed lot two will be a 3.5 net acre lot with the existing single family dwelling at 16671 563rd. So the majority of both these parcels are located in the floodplain. This is a floodplain map. It is the Keekley branch of the South Skunk River that runs through these properties. So part of the subdivision, we do have an easement 60 feet in width dedicated to the county. No new developments proposed. Again, this is just a parcel line adjustment, but if there was, we'd have requirements for mitigation of natural vegetation removed or floodplain development requirements. The existing dwelling on proposed lot one does have a letter of map amendment with FEMA to remove it from that special flood hazard area, and there's an accessory structure on proposed lot two that also has that FEMA letter of map amendment to remove it from the special flood hazard area. Regarding future land use due to the floodplain, there's an overlay of natural area over the majority of the site, but it's also designated as rural residential. So the main principles for this area are if developments proposed minimize conflicts with agricultural uses and natural areas. Again, no new development is proposed. And surrounding land use, a large agricultural parcel to the east, two properties to the south do contain dwellings, and the properties to the west also contain portions in crop production and the floodplain. They're all zoned A1 agricultural. And so this is the property's location. You can see it's about 3 miles east of the city of Gilbert. There's 11 single-family dwellings within a half mile of the property. And there's also a significant amount of properties that are zoned Greenbelt Conservation Districts because they're in that Skunk River Greenbelt area. So that's just something to note. So this is looking west at the existing dwelling on proposed Lot 1. This is looking northwest at the accessory structures on proposed Lot 1. Looking north from proposed Lot 2 onto proposed Lot 1. This is the existing dwelling on proposed Lot 2. And this is the area that they'd like to incorporate into their property through the through adjusting that boundary. So this is looking west. And this is just 563rd Avenue. I can go through the applicable regulations, but it meets all of these.
This is neighbors working together to do what's right for neighbors.
So,
this one's a pretty straightforward.
Yep. We mailed notification letters. An adjacent property owner inquired if the subdivision would change the location of a fence on the west property line. I said no. Reached out to the applicant to see if there were any plans. I don't know of any. If it's a livestock fence, it's exempt from our zoning requirements. If there's a new fence proposed, there's a zoning permit required, so we could address that that way. But they're allowed to be located on a property line. No setbacks or fences. So just a real quick review. Again, no new development, adjusting the boundary. As Rick said, neighbors working together on this. All requirements are met. And if any new development was proposed, we do have requirements for mitigating impacts on natural areas and floodplain. So that with that, we'd recommend alternative one, which is approval as requested. And I think the property owner and the applicant are here today.
Perfect.
Any questions?
So, Ms. Vollers, you've requested the right to speak. Would you want to go ahead first? And you assume you're Jonathan. We'll see if you want to speak as well.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks for bringing this to us.
Sure. My name is Jolie Vollers. I'm the property owner at 16671 563rd Avenue. And you put it very well. It's a couple of neighbors just trying to go through all the necessary requirements to just have a transfer of property. So when we look out our window, we're looking at our property versus theirs. So that's, and I just wanted to offer to speak in case there were any concerns or questions about. Obviously, we're not going to develop since it is in a floodplain.
Yeah, absolutely. So. No questions from me. Anybody have questions? Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good. Okay. So, like I said, this is really straightforward. It doesn't get a lot easier. We've had some hard things here the last few weeks, but this one isn't hard at all. You guys want to talk about it or you want to make a motion?
I would like to move approval of resolution 19-51 at the residential parcel subdivision plat, Tall Hound Timber Subdivision is put forth in SCD 13-18.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
Good job, Amelia.
Yeah. Sorry you had to sit through the whole meeting. I hope you found it entertaining.
Oh, I know it will be memorable.
Next is discussion consideration of Story County funding allocation to the asset process for 1920. Once again, Deb Shildroth, you started the meeting for us, and now you're going to get us near the end.
Good afternoon. I gave you a few documents in preparation for this meeting, and I just want to start out by saying ACID is gearing up for its hearings and work sessions coming up in the first week or two of January. We have 32 agencies in the process and over 130 services that we're considering, and there are 7 new services that are brought into the process for fiscal year 20. So if you want to look at that first sheet that just shows the historical recommendations, this is something that the ACID admin team took a look at our meeting earlier this month and decided it was good information to be sharing with our respective funders. We did share it with the Asset Board last Thursday at our meeting, and Supervisor-elect Linda Merkin was there, so she's had the information as well. And so we just wanted, you know, just a snapshot of the growth from fiscal year 2013 through 2019. So you can see that the three major funders, the county, the city, and United Way, have been keeping pretty much in sync with incremental growth. In fiscal year, if you look at that color chart, fiscal year 16, where the county kind of dipped, that was the year that we split apart the mental health funds.
Right.
That depicts when the mental health funds were being asked through the process by the region versus the county. So that's why that shows a little bit of a dip. One of the things that the asset admin team has been discussing, and I think it's fair to say it's going to come to the funders here within the next 6 months, is just how are we going to sustain growth, you know, as service requests come before the admin team and before the funders and dollars dollars are not increasing from the different funding sources as the requests are coming in from the agency. So how do we reconcile that? Are there some things within the asset process that we need to revise and take a look at? You know, and what is the input in the direction that the funders want to go? I think we took a step in the right direction with our priorities. We revised those quite a bit. From the county perspective, I know United Way made some changes, as did the city of Ames. And so I think that's the right step, but there, I think, are more things that we want to consider and have the funders' input on as we go forward in preparation for fiscal year 21 allocation process. And then we'll also have 2 years' worth of data from the CLEAR Impact Scorecard. Yes. So agencies, you know, it's written into our county contract that agencies enter their information and use that scorecard, so that there is a requirement, so then we're able to turn around and use that information to align with the priorities and make other kinds of funding recommendations and decisions. So having said that, are there any questions on the...
Yeah, so I just want to underscore what you said. I think that both Loris and Marty see this, but for anybody in the public. So through FY15, Story County's allocation to asset included mental health funding. And it, you know, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000. It varied from year to year because equalization dictated that it varied from year to year. And in essence, what you saw from the county is pretty flat general fund contributions with mental health dollars going up and down depending on what was happening with equalization. Then in FY16. With regionalization, we split those mental health dollars out. They're still coming from the taxpayers of Story County. They still flow through the county. But now instead of flowing directly to the asset process, they go to the region. The region makes its allocation decisions for asset. And so if you look at those numbers, it's reasonable if you want to compare 2014 to 2017, you need to combine the two numbers from the county and the region in order to get that done. And what you'll see if you do that is Story County has reliably, in the last 6 or 8 years, been increasing its funding of the asset process. In fact, to a greater, in conjunction with our partners, but to a greater level than our partners, United Way and the City of Ames. But that's because Story County has fallen behind in the 10 years leading up to 2011, 2012. Now we've been pretty consistent with our funders, last couple years, pretty consistent with our funders in making sure that we are increasing at a similar rate to what our funders are increasing. And in fact, I think, so did you talk at all about what United Way and the City of Ames has talked about in regards to their funding this year for asset?
Yes, the City of Ames, the City Council took action a week ago at their meeting and approved 3%.
Just 3?
Mm-hmm.
3 is pretty sustainable. I mean, you know, you want to talk about sustainable, 3 yeah. is where you can actually sustain something.
So that would have been $42,705. for the city. So their total allocation will be $1,466,200. United Way takes it to their board this Thursday, and I know that Gene Cressy, the director, has laid out some scenarios, a different percentage point, and will likely be recommending a 3%, which will be about $36,850.
Okay. I just had, and I'm looking at more as I ran some numbers, I mean, for the county part of this, based upon the increase of $500,000 more in services, that's quite a jump from over what the difference had been last year, which was $200,000, right?
And let's talk about that, if you don't mind.
Oh, sorry, I just back off.
No, it's a good point. I wanted to go through and just,
sure.
I mean, I put on the spreadsheet here kind of just some comments on particular services where it shows a new service or a new request. And if you want to go through each of those, or we can jump to the reason why, one of the reasons why it looks like a $500,000 increase.
You lead us through, how about?
Okay. Well, just quickly on access, we collapsed four services into two categories there at the top, so that we just streamlined that. So there's nothing new there other than collapsing some services, and the requests were collapsed as well. Access is requesting dollars for a brand new service called Homicide and Violent Crime Crisis and Support. And dropping down to Boys and Girls Club, as you are aware, they've opened a new site in Nevada, so they are requesting dollars from the county and United Way for that particular site. The next page, under Heartland Senior Services, mobile meals, they quoted this as an under-mandated age threshold. So this is for individuals under the threshold of 60 years old. They were receiving dollars through a caregiver's grant that they lost. And so they're asking ASSET to make up that $3,000. If you jump down to Lutheran Services in Iowa, they are no longer providing the school-based mental health service, despite our efforts to keep that program going. They have decided, because of the MCO model and the fact that kids have other insurance providers, that they are not coming to ASSET to fund this service. So that is why there are no dollars indicated there.
So the service is not going away, but the ASSET funding of some of it is?
Correct. Yeah, and I do believe it has been scaled back quite a bit as a result of how they're getting funded through Medicaid and other private insurance sources.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
MICA, it's not a new service to MICA, but it is a new service to ASSET, is their Head Start program. When they, last summer when we got the new service request, they had indicated they were losing dollars from a Boost grant.
Right.
But it looks like that might be restored or might be at the level that they need to continue the program.
Right.
So we will get that fleshed out at the agency hearings in January. So that may or may not via request. Salvation Army is requesting dollars from the county for their food pantry service. And then jumping down to the Volunteer Center, we've been working with Ann Owens and her board on clarifying what exactly it is ASSET is funding for their volunteer management program. And so we'll continue that discussion, but their overall request had went up quite a bit. It looks like they are moving a lot of their expenses for their program to ASSET. And so we want to flush that out with them a little bit more as to why they feel that the ASSET part of their program is bearing the brunt of those expenses versus the other things that they do for other entities and get paid to do it. So we've got some work to do there yet.
Not the big one.
Yes, so why is that? So if you recall,
a couple,
3 years ago, at the request of juvenile court, we started moving some of the services that YSS provides out of the juvenile court budget, so county funded.
Yeah, we're already funding.
Yep.
Right. Out of this, goes to JCS and then from JCS to YSS.
Right. Right. And so at JCS request, they wanted it to go through the asset process. And we did that with a handful of services to the tune of about $100,000. So we've kind of let that play out as the first part of the transition. And now Jerome Rewerts came to the Board of Supervisors last July and said, okay, can we move the remainder of the services to the asset process? And you as a board had approved to do that. And that is currently $268,000.
Okay. On that amount, if you look under public education and awareness, and it shows the partial transfer from JCS, but it went up 120. I'm wondering if this is the ask to replace the fact that they lost the grant. If you remember, I came to the board before, and that public health was funding comprehensive services differently.
Yeah, so I've seen it differently than that.
All right, so
So what we funded in 19 through asset was $49,000.
Mm-hmm.
They're now requesting $167,000, but I think the lion's share of that is made up in funding that goes through JCS. Is that right or wrong?
But, yeah.
There's a portion.
A portion. Okay.
Yes, and that's what I want to point out, because I do think, Laura, that has to do with something, the loss of that grant. And that's a question we have for them for their agency hearing.
Okay.
But those services, so the mentoring, the kids club, and the public education and awareness for substance abuse, I noted their partial transfers because those are services that the county was already funding through the asset process, and then there were dollars that they were also pulling down, they mean YSS,
right,
the juvenile court. Mm-hmm. So we're pulling all of those over to asset, but then there are increases on top of that.
Right. So just to let you know, I got a short text from the Executive Director of Community and Family Resources this morning, I think it was. Anyway, the Iowa Department of Public Health has awarded the grant to Community and Family Resources. And just a reminder that some services used to be funded by a separate grant to YSS for Story and Boone County. And now the CFR is receiving the money for Story and Boone County also. And that's the money I was talking about, maybe in here, because believe that YSS is coming back and asking for those, to continue to fund those services, even though it'd be offered as a duplicate service then. So, yeah. Okay. Thanks.
So when you look at the total of the general basic dollars, if you subtract out that $268,000 that we're really kind of transferring from juvenile court to asset, it takes that amount down to $225,306.
Okay, thank you.
Going on to local option dollars, nothing changed there in terms of services. The same agencies are requesting dollars for the same services. So you see a bump there of about $3,800. And then down under public health, line 152, the Lifeline service, you'll see that they are not requesting any funds for that. Technology has kicked in, and so instead of the traditional bracelet or necklace that a person would wear to push a button and it would send a signal then to public health, people are using phones. I mean, there are apps that they're using. There are just other more technology-driven kinds of services out there that Mary Greeley is working with individuals on using. So they're not requesting public health funds for Lifeline, but they did increase other amounts for the other services that they are providing. So there's a little over $9,000 increase there. Questions or comments?
I think that as the administrative team leads that discussion about sustainability, funding, it will be
as we look at 3% is not a lot when you look at the cost that agencies are even bumping up to provide some of the existing services. Yeah. So,
okay. So more to come on that.
Yeah, so I think I agree partially, Morris, with what you just said, but I think what's important to note in this is it cannot be solely the county's responsibility to fund every request that's made, and every request that's made doesn't automatically get funded. The second thing I'm going to point out is, I mean, if we talk through a 3% increase, which in essence is $35,000 from us in general fund, right? Also talk about continuing increasing in loss, and I'm suggesting another $500 there, which would take us from $17,500 to $18,000. And then there's a $10,000 additional request from the county through the public health funds, right? But that's calculated in ours. The other one to consider is that $268,000 that Deb mentioned earlier. We're not talking about all said and done. When you see the numbers at the end of the day, we're going to go from a million one to more like a million five, even with only a true 3% increase. So I'm saying increase the million one by 3% in line with United Way and the City of Ames. But in addition to that, you've got the $10,000 for public health, you've got $500 for loss, and the $268,000 that was flowing through JCS that's now going to be going straight from the county into the asset process. It's a 30% increase.
Okay, but I look at the JCS as a wash. I mean, it's just a different about where the funds flow through. It's not really new money as far as paying for an increase in services, right? I mean, we're not really buying anything new through that. We've just shifted the account we're paying for.
Right, but what has happened now is the county will go to, from being the third funder a few years ago, the county will now be the largest funder of the entire asset process. We will surpass Ames, or close to surpass Ames, with all of that funding in. And we need to recognize that stuff. And the other one is, it's tough on our funding partners if they both say 3% and we come in and say, you know, we're the white knight, we're going to fund a lot different percentage than you're going to fund. I think that is problematic. One of the reasons that we pushed so hard to increase through the years is because we were behind. We were not keeping pace with our funding partners. Now not only are we keeping pace, however we're getting there, we're moving to the front of the line in terms of the funders for the asset process.
So going to those other two examples you gave, the $10,000, the $5,000, and then the $500. So are partners also absorbing, or are they also similarly increasing for
well,
those?
They both fund out of one. No. That's, yeah. Go ahead.
So the City of Ames use local option dollars for all of it. And, of course, United Way then are the donor dollars. The county's unique in that we use the general fund and the local options.
And public health.
I asked it backwards. I meant the services themselves. Are they, for the amount that we're coming through to pay for that extra money in particular services, what about for the city and for United Way? Are they taking on those same types of services with extra money also?
That will be considered through the process. I mean, it's definitely not enough to make up the new requests.
Right.
And the additional requests. We just have never.
Has there ever been a year you've said yes to every request?
No.
Okay.
No.
I just.
Thinking more on five, you know, which is what we did last year. So that's.
And I'm not. I think it's a great conversation for the board to have as we go forward and we talk about budget, but Deb needs a little direction sooner rather than later.
I understand.
And in my mind, it will always be easier if the new board wants to say, okay, it's not three, it's five. I would rather do that than say it's five and move it back to three. And so what I'm going to suggest coming out of here today is we say 3% increase to our general fund dollars, $500 increase to our loss, which takes it from $17,500 to $18,000, and then try to accommodate the $10,000 request in public health. That was a little different because we're more pass-through, but try to accommodate that $10,000 difference in public health. That's the direction I'm suggesting for Deb, and then if as the new board sits down, we want to say, no, we're not doing three, we're doing five, Deb, I think you can find a way to accommodate that. The other thing I'm going to point out is the Board of Supervisors has traditionally not weighed in on what our asset volunteers, how they allocate those
correct.
Funds.
That's
so there
correct.
May be a project that you feel strong about that doesn't get funded by our, at
right.
the level you want through our volunteers.
But I don't. That's not where I'm headed.
Okay.
I'm just literally headed at an overall. I see the amount, even although I do feel better. We're back in the 200,000 in additional requests. I just okay.
Yeah, it's
so,
not as bad as you originally thought.
Yeah, I was reading this over the weekend and. Depression was good setting in, you know, and I go, how are we going to sustain? But thank you for that. So, all right. So
it looks to me like we're
like
going
the
to be able to fund
rate.
About almost 50% of the new requested funds, and that doesn't even take into account there may be some ongoing funding that is not sustained at the level that it was. That's what our volunteers have to dig into.
Right, and keep in mind, the volunteers make a recommendation, mm-hmm. and so those recommendations, I will be bringing those to the board. I'm looking at that first week in February.
I'm comfortable with you guys doing this because clearly this is a conversation of 2019.
Right.
I would like it, Loris, if you're comfortable that you make the motion, and if you're comfortable with us starting where I'm suggesting we start, that still gives us a spot to talk about it as we go.
Sure. I'll make the motion at 3% plus the $500 increase in local option sales tax money plus the $10,000 from public health funds for a recommendation for the asset volunteers to use.
I think this is a well reason conversation. You did not find yourself in any manner. You had an opportunity to revisit it. I guess I look at this as more of a historical thing. I appreciate the material Deb provided us, and I'll get to it with a vote here in a minute. But people don't understand where the region steps into on a player basis, where it seems like the only dollars they hear about is what we apportion. And in fact, no, there are regional dollars following up the mental health component that is quite substantial and is always increasing. So, you know, you get to see where we are one of the top three funders. We grow it, and it's just a question of how much you choose to grow it. So with that, second.
Motion and second. Deb, are we giving you what you need?
Yes. For clarification, though, so it's 3% on the current, the fiscal year 19 general fund amount.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
Plus the 268.
Yes. Plus the 268. Plus, we're trying to accommodate the public health,
yep.
but we recognize that we don't just automatically
right.
control that.
$500
for local. Plus the $500
yep.
for local
option. Yep, perfect.
Everybody good?
Good.
Olson?
Yes.
Chief? Aye. Sanders? Aye.
I just want to know, I did add up between CICS last year and what we put in. It was $1.99 million.
People never
so
build that
in
relationship to the right. fact of what it's brought to bear in Story County. And the thing is, you can't go past that line item number and not be impressed, because look at the difference year over what the region did.
Yeah, we're filling our role. Story County taxpayers are filling their role in the asset.
You hear people and they speak to it in different places in different ways. They think like, well, the asset funding is languishing or the county isn't doing all it can. It's just like, I don't think you realize in totality. That is a great graph that I appreciate you bringing to us.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Good. All right, next item is update on mobile home park at Crestview. So excited, Jerry.
Hi, Paula. Okay.
Jesus is like a Christmas present, Jerry.
Yeah.
And Louisa, on the Board of Health going forward, you're going to touch this.
This is a, we're getting there.
Little stuff.
When did you guys, as a board, either on the health side or the supervisors, first touch this?
2014.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's been a slow process since I started in 2015.
today. There's been a lot of progress made, so that should be acknowledged.
And I'm as hard on the property owner as anybody, right? I've been frustrated with him and have shown my frustration from time to time. Let me just say that the progress that he's made here the last few months, I'm not saying we're at the end, but the progress that he's made the last few months has been commendable. And I am hopeful that we're getting close to full resolution of this.
Getting very, very close. The board will recall that we tied the zoning permit for the temporary hoop building with a condition that mobile homes be removed. One of the thresholds was by August 31st, there was to be 18 units. And then by the end of November, November 29, there was supposed to be zero there. Well, it's very close to zero. There's actually three there that he's using for storage, and I'll get into that. I met him on the 29th at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I'd forgotten how dark it gets quickly. So I did talk to Brant. His number one goal for the property is to sell the property, and I assured him that our department and the county doesn't really care who owns it as long as, you know, the focus is the removal of the mobile homes and the cleanup that needs to take place. So there's three mobile homes that have been converted to storage, and his term is that he's using it to store industry items like things from previous mobile homes, the skirting, doors, windows, that kind of thing. And he told me that he just ran out of time and he needed more time to go through this stuff. The WHO building was there. That's in the center part of the site. There's quite a bit of debris and recyclable materials, primarily in the north end and the northwest area. But a lot of that stuff, brick, blocks, metal material, is in nice little piles. So he's trying to reuse, repurpose this material, which makes all the sense in the world. The dirt pile that he brought in, southwest corner, is still there. He has a plan for that. Semi-trucks, trailers, pickup trucks, pull-behind trailers are there. He indicated that he has some interest in acquiring some of those. There's several storage sheds that have been left behind from some of the previous tenants. But at the end of the review session, I asked Brant to provide us with kind of an overall plan for the property, what his plan for the hoop building would be, and then a compliance schedule to address the removal of all this stuff. I ended up going back on the 30th because, as I said, it got dark quick, and the pictures that I took were really dark. And on the 30th, I noticed that there were two additional mobile homes that were brought in on the north end on that farthest north-east-west drive. But he actually came in and talked to me about that and said that the people that acquired those couldn't set them wherever they were going to set them because it was too wet. And so when I went back out on December 10th, they were gone. So that was a good thing. So Mr. Lemire did give us a letter December 6th with his plans for the three existing mobile homes that he's using for storage, the hoop building and the dirt pile. He'd like to use that dirt to fill in some of the low spots on the property, which makes sense where there were previously mobile homes sitting. And he has a request to use the hoop building for storing what he refers to as his contractor business. He'd like to put his Bobcat tree trimming equipment or truck in there, and that's something that would be a permitted use in the commercial light industrial district. He actually applied for a zoning permit application that we routed, we reviewed it, and provided comments to him to respond to. He did not provide information on the cleanup. He didn't give us a schedule, so that's why we ended up taking the action or the position that we did. He provided us sketch layout of some of the buildings on the property. There's a building in the west central portion that used to be used for laundry services that he is storing a lot of different appliances in. And I think Marty, one of the trips out there, we've actually seen inside there. Exhibit B are the three existing mobile homes that he's using for storage. And then Exhibit C is the Hoop building. And as I said, he did apply for the zoning permit. It's been reviewed, and we're waiting for a response from him on those comments that we have. So these are the site photos taken at 4:30 on the 29th. This is looking at the main entrance. We're looking south, and we'll be panning to the southwest and then north. And as you can see, a lot of those mobile homes on that south.
It's amazing that they're gone.
They're gone. So there's the Who building. I think this building here was used earlier in the for the probably as an office in the height of the park. This is the furthest east north-south drive. This is the northeast corner. I think this RV and this camper are the property owners. But there's semi-trucks. Trucks, I've got some details of it in the next set of photos here. This is at the northeast corner looking to the northwest. You can see that it's gotten dark. This is the photos I took on the 30th, again, that northeast corner. You can see that tree trimming apparatus that he uses. That is, I think, the property owner's RV. This is one of the existing mobile homes. There's another one just north of it. He refers to this as a fence, and I told him that it wasn't a fence because we require permits for a fence, and we had no permits for it. Further to the north, you can see things are in piles in the back of that truck, things that he's gone through. Metal material in the back of a pickup bed. This is the second mobile home. Again, that's a part of what he's referring to as a fence. Northeast corner, looking to the northwest, you can see there's quite a few sheds out there. There's probably 10 to 12 different sheds. Some of them are in poor shape. Some of them are in pretty decent shape, and I would think there would be value in them. These are the two mobile homes that I saw on the 30th. They're gone now. This is the third mobile home. He converted it to storage. You can see the doors that he put in there. This is just north of the Who building. This is the central north-south drive, the Who building, and then this was the laundry building. Now it's used for storing some of the appliances from the mobile homes. Again, this is probably the messiest area of the site, the northwest, but I think a lot of it, you can see that he's done a lot of the work, and he's trying to organize things into piles or categories. Here's some of the block material. He tried to give block material away as he was selling or giving away mobile homes for setting the units. You can see some appliances. Again, some of these sheds are in pretty bad shape. Some are in pretty decent shape. More material, yard debris, metal material, wood, pallets, some more blocks right here. This is the screen enclosure. There's some tires, assortment of things, a couple of semis. There's a semi trailer further to the west. The sewage lagoon, this is still being used. It's in operation. The house that the property owner owns is connected to it still. This is the furthest west north-south drive. You can see a shed there, and then that what was previously the laundry building. Another semi truck, a few vans, trailer. There's the dirt pile. Again, he'd like to use that to reset, fill in some of the low spots. We asked him for a diagram to indicate where that fill might take place, and then plans for controlling erosion. So to sum up, the property is zoned commercial light industrial district. He can do storage of the contractor part of his operation in that Who building with a zoning permit. The zoning permit and the site sketch plan that he submitted, though, does require action by the board. And we'll get that on the agenda as soon as we get responses to the comments that we had. And then the other thing that he wanted to do is to do like outdoor storage as an enterprise activity, so store other people's vehicles. And that's something that's not addressed in the commercial light industrial district, nor is it addressed in the heavy industrial district. So we communicated to him that to do that, to request that, would be a text amendment. And so that's something that would start with conceptual review, and we would involve all the departments in their review of that. And then ultimately it goes to board, Planning and Zoning Commission, and then the Board of Supervisors.
Did he indicate an interest in pursuing that after he inquired?
I haven't heard that since he received the response. And so we, you know, we asked him for a compliance schedule, did not receive it. So because of the time of the year, and because we know that snow is coming, and probably not so great weather, and because he still has some things to get rid of, we would like to give him 90 days to remove the three mobile homes. Again, he told me that he just didn't have time to get through sorting through some of that stuff that's in those three. Remove the debris and the recyclable materials, the storage sheds and the contents, and the vehicles. We're talking about those that are not his or those that he has no interest in acquiring. Again, his goal, that he told me, was to sell the property. If he retains ownership and wants to acquire, you know, whatever he owns is his business, but if they're not his, then he's got to go through the process to remove them. So, again, we think that's fair and reasonable, and we did provide this to the county attorney's office to review, and they agreed. Be happy to answer your questions.
So, yeah, I'll jump in and start. So, the highest and best use of that property entails it getting sold to a developer and figuring out where it goes from there. And the impetus on the county to really, really focus in on this property adhering to the letter of all of our ordinances was when it was a health issue. And it's not a health issue anymore, right? Attractive nuisance issue now, but it seems to be getting better. I find that it's completely reasonable that we would let Mr. Lemure know that, okay, for the next 3 months, the next 90 days, we're going to leave you alone, but in 90 days, we have an expectation that you're going to have that cleaned up and meeting our requirements, or you're going to have it sold and it's somebody else's problem. I think that's a reasonable spot for us to be. 2018 was not a great year for Mr. Lemure, and he made great progress in the last few months. I think we ought to recognize that progress and take a breath and say we're getting there. Now let's give him some time to try to go ahead and get there. I'm with you. If he wants to use that property for any commercial kind of enterprise, he needs to go through the full process, and we don't need to just all of a sudden start seeing something that looks like a commercial enterprise going on there. But if he wants to just have it as his property and work his way through the recyclables and the sheds, some in good shape, some not in good shape, let's give him time to do that.
Right, and that's up to 90 days, so he can still keep working. We have decent weather, so there's no reason why he can't.
And all I'm suggesting is I would suggest that we shouldn't worry about it unless we notice a change to the property. If it just kind of looks like it looks for the next 90 days, that I would suggest we just kind of leave it alone for now.
Hopefully it continues to get...
I hope, but I'm saying I would suggest that we don't take an active interest in that for 90 days and just kind of let him do what he does for 90 days, and then we dig back in when we get to March.
There were two people when I was there on the 29th who he said were interested in acquiring the property who...
Yeah, we got to let him just deal with that as, you know.
Right. So... were you looking at, Rick, the 90 days just not even just saying we're going to go through 90 days, which to me is go to April 1 because it is the holiday season. I mean, you know, so we take them from January through or March 31st. All right, January 1 through
March 12 is what we told him.
I see that. Yeah. So we give him a Christmas gift, a holiday gift, and we take him down.
I say Christmas.
Okay, 31st. So March 31st. So, all right. And Rick, you're just saying this. Don't really bother to go out. Don't panic. Don't monitor and say, oh, no, it's 2 weeks left.
I'm saying unless we notice a change
Okay. Between
now and, if you want to say April 1st, unless we notice something changing on the property between now and April 1st, we frankly don't worry a lot about it. But on April 1st, we let him know that on April 1st, the expectation is that you're going to have this stuff handled or you're going to have divested yourself of the property. That's the expectation. And then on April 1st, we dig back in again, and that gives us plenty of separate. Right now, it's all convoluted. You've been dealing with him in every Board of Health meeting. You know, we've been dealing with this. And now we're to the point that we can draw a line and separate between what it was, what it is now, what we hope it's going to be, and we give what it is right now a chance just to settle in and give him a reasonable chance to do what he needs to do.
Correct. Well, we think it's very achievable. He removed 18 mobile homes in 3 months. So three and some debris and some of those garden sheds. I mean, some of those garden sheds are in really good condition.
So does this require a motion, or can it just be directed
really
to you?
It's really just an update to the board.
Yeah. Okay. So, Loris, I'm good with what you're suggesting. Jerry, hopefully you're good with, let's just, you know, he can't do anything new with the property, but if he's just doing what he's doing now and he's working his way through it slowly, let's just leave him alone for a little bit.
Sound good?
That sounds
good.
Are
you all right with that, or do you care? I mean, you just, this has got to be one that you're glad you don't have to deal with.
Yeah, you get a lot of time.
I would have thought it would have been done by now. I'm sure everybody else's sentiment, but Grant responds to deadlines and not like a little bit of pressure, and I would tell you what, he's a good actor when he knows that we're an active participant. You know, when you sit there and say 90 days, don't care, careful on this one.
But we do care when we get to April 1st.
I would just tell you.
Just let him try to figure it out.
Hopefully he's that time.
The expectation is that he will be a good actor and you will see.
So the message should be that he will hear from the county again in early spring.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where we are. Okay?
Done.
Good. Public forum number 2, opportunity for a member of the public to comment on anything you'd like to comment on. Anybody wishing to do so? That's a big chance. All right. Liaison assignments, and I'll just remind you guys that I'm trying to drive from here to Denver today.
I know.
So keep that in mind as you give us your liaison assignments.
Okay. The one thing I want to note is that there is a HRTA board meeting, a special meeting on Thursday, and the topic under discussion will be whether we're going to keep contracting with companies in Dallas and Madison counties. Right now they provide the services. The other thing that I want to say, even though Marty and I are going to spend short time together next week in a meeting, is that I have really, really, not using the double as ever, but Marty, you have been a very decent, very friendly and up above poor person to work with, and I am honored to have had the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you. I feel the same. What else you got?
That's it. I'm done. Thanks.
All right. The conversation is still continuing to Veda and the immediate fallout of the CAFO applications.
Okay.
I think people are realizing there is a new normal. I appreciate the fact that the people went to the trouble to educate themselves that they did, but in the immediacy of the meeting last week, I was face-to-face with one of our state reps who had radio silence as far as contact in regards to the people that, you know, somebody that can do the addressing on this. I suspect 2019 you will be looking at an application, if not more, going forward. I look forward to seeing what the future board does with this particular topic, and so does the rest of the county. That said, we had, taking into account present company, we had a very strong raft of approvals onto our boards and commissions. That was clearly a top shelf group of people, and I think the counties will serve to that. Appreciate everybody that showed up yesterday on the going away party, and Merry Christmas.
All right, so my last meeting of 2018, I'll echo what Laura said. It's been a pleasure serving with you, Marty. You came into a tough situation, and you've made every day better. I think your love of Story County comes through loud and clear, and I think you can rest assured that as you depart at the end of this year from service as an elected official in Story County, you leave it better than you found it. Not, you don't leave it as you found it. You leave it better than you found it, and we appreciate your efforts. One note I'll make is I testified before a legislative committee made up of state senators and state representatives just on mental health funding. I continue to push really, really hard for them to free up our regions to do what the regions need to do. Specifically, if you're talking to any of our representatives, they need to get rid of this artificial 20 or 25%, depending on the size of the region, to the ending fund balance. It doesn't allow us to create any new services and be able to fund ongoing services on a cash flow basis. And the second thing is they need to free up county supervisors to levy what we need to levy to provide those services and do away with these completely made up per capita spending amounts. So I had a good presentation to them. It was well received. We'll see where it ends up. That's all. If we don't have anything else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
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 We're adjourned.